ça, ça va durer. Car plus tard, je vais me
Honorable members, those who are outside, my son inside, we are about to start our meeting. Our staff, we must show that our agenda of today is honorable members, good morning. I'm suspecting you have enjoyed your weekend. Some of us were sick. I couldn't speak the whole weekend. You know that it was not easy even last Tuesday. I'm suspecting I'm 100% now. I'm ready for action. I'm ready for anything in committee today that we're having our visitors. Let me take this, this opportunity to welcome our delegation from Sinning, South Africa. I do have themselves. I will ask the leader of themselves to introduce the leaders that he is with. According to agenda, already opening the meeting today. Swimming South Africa, that's your opportunity today. Swimming South Africa, I'll give you after the presentation the end. According to our agenda, we're swimming South Africa today.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much for inviting us to provide you some feedback in terms of status of swimming. I'd just like to introduce the delegation we have. On my right is Mr. Sean Adias, who is the Chief Executive of Swimming South Africa. I'm the President. We have Ziggy Malusi, who is the Executive Member, and Mr. Brian Reynolds, who is the Vice President of Swimming South Africa.
Thank you. Can you take us through?
Yes. Our presentation, as you've requested, we will be discussing our performance, the governance, financial, transformation issues, and the development of swimming in the last few years. In terms of performance here, we've had some really good performances in swim over the last few years. At the African Youth Games in Gaborone last year, we won 48 medals. 26 of those were gold, 10 were silver, and 12 were bronze. And the two top swimmers at that event from South Africa's side were the brothers Allard and Eric, who won 4 gold and 2 bronze and 3 gold and 2 silver each. At the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow as well, Manchester, We won 12 medals at the end, and two were gold and two silver and 6 points. And the top two teams at that event was Chad Lefos, who won 2 gold and 2 bronze, and Cameron Leberg, who won a gold and a silver. And also here we had Casey Jimmy, who won silver in the 4x200 freestyle. I've highlighted some of the swimmers here today because also from transformation point, we started to see some of the black swimmers starting to win medals at some of the good events. At the African Union's Sports Council Region 5 Games in Bulawayo in December, the South African swimming team won 57 of the medals, share 32 gold, 17 silver, and 8 bronze. And at the FIA World Short Course Championships in Doha in December, we won 4 gold and 1 silver. And at that event as well, Chad was chosen as the FINA Swimmer of the Year, and Graham Hill, who's Chad's coach, was also selected as the FINA Coach Achievement Award for his performances in terms of Chad's performances over the last few years. And the most recent competition that the South African team has come to Junior Team that took part at the regional 06 games in Luanda and Angola, the team was more than 50% black there, and we came back to 94 medals, 32 gold, 32 silver, 32 bronze, and every single swimmer in the team won a medal. And you see some of the swimmers, the black swimmers that did exceptionally well, and we firmly believe that there's a very big talent in this country. It's about how we nurture them, invest in them, to make them medal winners at all these national going forward. From a governance point, these are the 5 areas I'm going to talk about: the financial stability, the changes we made around our constitution, the geopolitical boundaries, and in terms of the governance of our affiliates and school sports. In terms of our constitutional alignment, there were a number of areas where we were required to make amendments to our constitution, and these were linked to, one, our international federation making changes requiring us to make amendments, the African Union Sports Council Region 5 requiring certain changes in terms of our constitution, as well as SASCOP. Those changes were incorporated in our constitution, and they were adopted at a special general meeting in April this year. In terms of alignment with our geopolitical boundaries, Swimming South Africa had 14 affiliates spread across the country, and over the last few years we've been moving towards a process of aligning all our structures in terms of the political boundaries, geopolitical boundaries, in terms of the constitution, both in terms of districts and in terms of provinces. And 7 of those have already been aligned and have had their elections. The final 2 that are on track for middle of this year, middle of July, are Gauteng and the Western Cape, so that will be finalized. The issue on finances that and from swimming you have seen in all the media reports, etc., it's been a major challenge. Leading up to the 2012 Olympic Games, we were very fortunate. We had a corporate sponsor, and we had the Lotto, who were major supporters of swimming. And through that, of the preceding 8 to 10 years leading up to 2012, there was a substantial investment in swimming. And those are literally the results you see for in terms of our performances, both at the 2012 Olympics and also at the recent events we've seen since then. And challenge with a sport like swimming is it's not a short-term investment. It takes 8 to 10 years for you to literally and develop athletes before they start performing. So you can't literally invest in athletes a few months before maybe international event and hope that they're going to win those. Unfortunately, post the 2012 Olympic Games, we've not had a corporate sponsor, and there's also been a substantial reduction in terms of the National Lotteries Fund support for swimming. We've taken the view that we're engaging with the corporate sector, we had various marketing companies trying to assist us, but we've not been fortunate to get a substantial sponsor like we've had in the past. And we've taken the view that while we continue to look for sponsors, that we can't depend on that. And we've looked at various other ways of trying to find funding. We've had to rationalize our activity, and it's had a substantial impact on some of our programs. To a large extent, most of our programs and trips overseas are funded by athletes and parents. and we'd like to increase our membership fees for our affiliate structure and members across the country so that the sport of swimming can continue. The problem with that is it starts to come barrier to entry into sport. In a country like South Africa, where a significant number of people can't afford to, it's about how do you make sure that this will not be coming into exclusive sport, and how do we make sure that we can generate the funds from other sources so that more people can swim. We're looking at options and speaking to other organizations, both in terms of how we can look at fundraising options, looking at getting fundraising events to support some of our activities, and also looking at how we can create opportunities in terms of broadcasting going forward. We've been fortunate that we've finally signed a broadcasting agreement with SABC, which would mean that swimming will be on TV going forward from the latter part of this year. And hopefully that will help you attract sponsors to come on board. This slide gives you an indication of how our funding situation has changed pretty dramatically since 2011. You'll see our income in 2011 was approximately 30 million, and that came down to in 2014 to 17 million. Similarly, our expenses was in line with that because a lot of our funding is supporting our various programs, and a cut in those that income results in a cut in the programs. And you'll see that it's almost a 50% reduction from what we were in 2011. We've had to put in programs in terms of more efficiency, in terms of business efficiencies of how we operate, but programs have had to come down. We've also eaten into reserves we've had over the last few years, say, in terms of what we had in the organization. So this is a serious concern for us going forward, because of the viability of the sport, and if we can't continue to invest, the risk is that while at a high level we might have some very challenging athletes right now, that developing junior athletes requires an investment in those athletes. And in South Africa, we've shown that we have substantial talent of athletes in swimming across the board. So what we've looked at is primarily looking at internal sources of revenue from our membership in terms of fundraising, membership fees, etc. We're still expecting grants from government and lotto in various cities. We're looking at broadcasting rights and agreements with the broadcasters. Until recently, if you want to get on television, we had to pay for the production cost to go on television. It doesn't matter which broadcasting channel it was on. And then also looking at sponsorships. We have a few small sponsorships, mainly very time sponsors that help contribute towards the cost of it. But we're trying to secure sponsors at much smaller levels and bringing more sponsors on board to support them. We're also looking at approaching the aspect from CSI point of view, because in South Africa we have a large number of children that can't swim. And a big part of our program is Learn to Swim program, and we try to ensure that every child in this country can swim. And part of that is to make sure that we are pushing the private sector in terms of the CSI funds to see if they can support programs across the country. Drowning is still one of the most significant causes of accidental deaths in the country. And we're also engaging with various individuals looking at setting up a foundation that can look at sourcing funding for organizations to support our various programs. In terms of transformation here, there's two areas we focus on is around structures and programs. And the issue of transformation is still a major challenge for swimming in this country. Both in terms of, if you look at our national team, you'll see that reflects that. That's a legacy issue that we're struggling to deal with. And unless there's investment in that share, it's going to be a challenge. I'm going to talk to you about some of the things we're looking at. As part of addressing the issue about perceptions and bringing more people, we've taken a decision as part of our constitution to look at how we draw more black people into our various districts, provincial and national structures, to start bringing people that understand challenges in the townships, in the various districts where people are looking to and can't, so that we can start changing that. Trying to look at targeted programs in terms of youngsters out of our national competitions. We have we select squads, about 150 children looking at the programs going across the next few years, and there's a very focused program on identifying talented bachelors from across the country and putting in the programs to support that. And again, in terms of our constitutional requirements, we need to really ensure our transformation in our constitution so that it's a formal part of what we're managing going forward. A key part of our program is the Learn to Swim program. And again, because of the legacy issue in largely white communities, children have the opportunity to swim from a very early age, either because the parents are taking them to Learn to Swim programs or as part of the school programs. Almost all the schools have a swimming program. We've had a program over the last few years where we've been training Learn to Swim instructors across the country, and they go and run programs in target schools and community pools across the country. This program, again, because of the funding has been scaled down last year, in 2014 there were over 4,000 children that we trained through these programs. And in terms of from a club development point, there's a specific focus on black clubs. And in last year we supported 9 clubs across the country. And that included underneath 2 athletes in those clubs, and they were made up of 4 African clubs, 4 colored and 1 Indian club. And depending on the funding program, we're looking at expanding and growing these programs in the coming year. We've been fortunate in some of the provinces, we've had support from provincial sports departments to support these programs, and as it happens, the national funds we get reallocated to programs in other parts of the country. Here we have, as Swimming South Africa, a very robust competitive program. We have 7 age group competitions happening between March and April every year, and they're basically based from a performance point in entry level, where entry level swimmer takes part all the way to the top age group swimmers in the country. We then also have our national championships. And out of those events, we choose a squad of approximately 150 athletes. And they're a very structured program based on times, and swimming is very much time-based sport. And the different squads have different criteria that they have to meet. And we have a senior, youth, and junior squad, and also a fast-tracking squad that focuses on conditioning issue and transformation. But these squads are very much focused not just for the short term, but looking at possible finalists and medalists at various regional, continental, and international events all the way between now and 2024. As I indicated, it's a mid-year plan. So the idea is to look at not the short term, but bringing and identifying talented youngsters much earlier and monitoring and tracking them. So this is a program that we have, and then what we do today is put them in various camps around the country. We then target them for specific competitive events where we send them on competitions at regional, continental, and national level as well. From a long-term focus here, I think from a swimming point, you know, we can complain about we don't have money and things like that, but the challenges in the country with huge challenges that we have in the country is about how do we come up with creative programs and partnerships and access the kinds of resources to make sure that we can develop and grow swimming to continue winning medals. So we have a number of programs in terms of that to address that, and the critical part of it is at a high level is the centers of excellence, and we create in partnerships with various universities across the country, and you'll see some of those on the list, where we have very focused programs with those universities, talented youngsters that are going to be competing at many international events are based at these universities. And again, you know, because of the lack of funding, it's partnerships with them where these universities then appoint coaches and have the youngsters that we have identified as part of the squads swimming in those programs. The other aspect here we've introduced in the last year is what we call performance centers, and these are schools. So if you look at the school swimming program, it's a huge challenge. Swimming is largely based in the sort of former Model C schools in the suburbs. And those schools often have very good facilities too. They have these facilities, they pay for coaches, and there's a very structured swimming program. And the challenge in the short term is why are we trying to address the issue of lack of resources in the townships and access to schools in the townships? We created partnerships with these schools, and the talented youngsters we've spoken about could be identified as part of our squads. We've engaged with these schools. There's so far 18 schools in the program, and we pretty much gone to about, I think, 100 bursaries from these schools. And the plan is to make sure we can raise the standard of coaching. So we've got formally SACWA accredited training courses for our coaches, which we delivered through in partnership with SASCOC. And the coaching standard is going to be raised at these schools. And the talented youngsters that we identify, the intention is to put them at these schools across the country so that they can monitor and mentor at a much closer level, and it's a less resource intensive, and that they can then become the core of a junior and youth program going forward. So those programs are starting to be rolled out across the country. So that, again, there's not a very resource intensive from swimming South Africa point, but it's a partnership between ourselves and schools that have those facilities. And I must say the schools have been very keen on coming on board with that. So it's about how we access existing resources that exist in the country. Again, this is the spread of the schools that I spoke about. One in the Free State, 8 in Gauteng, 4 in KwaZulu in the South, 2 in Mpumalanga, and 1 in Northwest. And there are no restrictions to that as we're going on, and as schools are interested, they come on board, and those numbers will be increased. And the idea is to make sure we're keeping the schools closer to where the children come from, because we've learned that, especially with young children, you don't want to take them away far from the families. The family support structure is critical in terms of growing and developing children at a young age. And the intention is to make sure that we can get these programs running closer to where the children are. I spoke about constraints. I think that the financial constraints is a major issue for us. In the short term, we've had to rationalize a number of our programs, from the Learn to Swim programs that we've had, the kind of support we provide to athletes who go to international competitions. And at a high performance level, in terms of winning medals, the one major challenge is, the one major value in terms of winning medals is racing opportunity. That our athletes have to go and race in Europe because that's where the major international competition is. And unless they're getting that racing opportunity, they're going to fall behind on the international stage. So while we're seeing some very good performances now, that's the investment we've had leading up to 2012. And I think that's going to become a risk going into medium and long term. And unless more funding is available or other models of funding are found, the long-term sustainability of swimming is at risk. In terms of facilities here, I think there's a few major issues. And the one major issue around transformation is facilities. That across the country, we're struggling for facilities for swimming. From a swimming point, it's not just having access to a facility, but from a competitive point, you have to have access to a heated facility. And unless you've got that, you're not going to develop medal winners on the global stage. That's not going to happen. Our concern is that there's very few municipalities around the country. We've seen, it's Beni and Mangaung investing in some facilities and heated facilities, but generally it's been a struggle. The issue around MIG funding that used to go to SRSA, we saw significant benefits from that in the days that used to happen, and I think that's the discussion that needs to be reopened about how we have facilities. But from a transformation point, which was the next slide talks about, from a transformation point here, this is a major challenge. I think there's two issues. If you look at most of the swimming programs, and this is not just in South Africa, but globally, swimming athletes pay for coaches a fair amount of money, and are trained by those coaches on a largely full-time basis. And we struggle to make sure from a transformation point for the funds that we have, we're addressing local volunteers on a part-time basis. And as we develop these people, when they get jobs here, they move on. And that's something we're going to have to look forward. Thank you very much. I'm not sure if my colleagues want to add anything.
Thank you, Chair. Major, any other interest from your discussion?
Yes, Member Sean, I'm sure. Ma'am, I just want to emphasize the issue of the facilities and coach myself in towns or communities. Our experience lately has been that other than the two municipalities listed there, that it's a big challenge to get municipalities to invest in towns or facilities. I'll give you an example. In the city of Johannesburg, most likely the municipality for the most swimming pools on the continent. I think in Joburg alone, city of Joburg alone, 55 swimming pools. Last year, not a lot of the pool were open by 1st of September. I'm using it as a practical example. Not a lot of the swimming pools were open. And guess what? Right? The swimming pool that was closed due to budget constraints and all of that was the township pools. If our pools were open, the township pools were closed. So that's the issue that we're talking about, political work. You know, I mean, with 121 years into freedom and then shows things like that going on. And there's a trend throughout the country, man. All the municipalities, and again I emphasize that section is the Queen and Mangaung. We've engaged with them, they bought me, and they actively started changing things. At the Queen, for instance, they have a target of they want to lead, put leaders in at least one swimming pool in the townships over the next 5 to 8 years. So, you know, it's a serious issue, right?
Thank you. Any other intake from our visitors?
Yes. Just from a point of view, I have recently been attending meetings in the Western Cape and with the City of Cape Town, and we went to, they have changed the structure that there's an events company or an events department that now look after swimming. We were sitting with a invite from FINA, who's the international body, for us to host a world championship in the city in 2025-2026. And that's 10 years away. And we've been approaching the city on the basis of, is the city prepared to bid for an event like this? Now, this event will bring more countries to the city of Cape Town than football did. At last World Championships, there was in excess of 250 countries participating in the World Games. The media coverage for South Africa, for everything, would be fantastic. And at this meeting, I requested the route and the path that should be taken for us to get the city. And the answer was, there will never be an aquatic center in this city. And that's very, very negative from the point of view of what's happening. In Khayelitsha, we've got programs running. We have a coach that's running there, and she unfortunately was sexually abused, and now the program stopped. And the program was aimed at the community and the schools in the area. And she was running on a daily basis in the morning, talking to schools, talking to children about water safety. In the afternoon, she was actually teaching just to swim. Now that program stopped, and I have to find someone else. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, honorable members. Let's thank the presenters, especially the leader of the delegation, the president, which is Naidu. You know, as this committee, we always, when we have our own visitors, telling them that we've decided when we join this committee, when we're looking at this committee, we've seen that 21 years down the line, there's no transformation on sport at last. So today we are confirming that, and I'm suspecting some of issues that we've raised, the members will interact, the MIG is a serious problem, the school sport is a serious problem. Now we are touching on things that we've been discussing, trying to check, come 5 years, once we are still in this committee, how are we going to assist anyone who has got a responsibility of looking at the school sports, of looking at the MIG? It's high on our agenda as this committee. I think your presentation, I'm suspecting together we can do more. We can take your advices. We can also advise you what we are thinking as this committee. Honorable members, this is the time to engage on the presentation. Let me take hands. Honorable Mabiga said he's going to attend another committee. That's in order. When you're having a problem, come earlier in the committee and report it to the chairperson that they're having a problem. There are those honorable members who are serving in about 2 to 3 committees because of their numbers. in their political parties, there are very few. So we do allow, but we do appreciate that we must start even in this committee in order that we must have a quorum. And I'm suspecting if we want social cohesion, this is a very, very committee that needs to be intent. May I have hands, Honorable Zegman, Honorable Madata, Honorable Ridani, Honorable Manana, Honorable Zomo, Honorable Moshe, Honorable Strike, in that order. Thank you so much. Honorable Zegman.
So just to say that when I was a councillor in Johannesburg, one of the big pools was in Alexandria. And our problem there was the upkeep and having a lifeguard there, because we had drownings at the pool and eventually they said, let's take the water out. You know, it's not like a soccer field where you can just water the grass and then you use that for the season, it lost, and it's a swimming pool needs high maintenance, it needs constant monitoring. And here's a good case in point on how sports and education or sports and infrastructure and municipalities are solved if they speak to each other. And I'm going to strongly suggest that Swimming SA in education, it's not Swimming SA's job to train people how to swim. It's Swimming SA to make managers, to make champions out of swimmers. It's education's job, of course, to teach people how to swim in terms of sports participation. In this committee, we're trying to get education on board and trying to get participation in sports. Now, swimming is it's almost a life skill. It's not really, it's not even a sport at one stage. The first thing we can do to help our country is to teach every single person how to swim. The best mechanism to do that is either in a local community or in a school. But we, as a sports committee, are pushing for that to happen through education. I think what we need to hold Swimming SA to account is to build champions or to build better swimmers based on the fact that they already can swim. But in terms of safety and in terms of costs, where the communication is going to break down again and where we will possibly need to support them as we come again is the municipalities. When they build a pool or they build an aquatic centre, who's responsible for that? Who's responsible for supplying the coach or the lifeguards or as we've just heard now, security for the staff that will volunteer to come and assist.
Thank you, Honourable. Honourable Malachi.
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to start with the last comment because I think they're very telling. But I think it's equally important for federations because it's becoming increasingly clear that the lack or failure in ineffectiveness of school sports is having an impact on federations, and more so the federations that need to be creating opportunities for black children in particular. Because the majority of black children, you know, have the first interaction with sport at school, because in their communities there is no infrastructure at all. And the more federations come here, the more it exposes that. But also to say, Chair, that I found it difficult to engage with the document substantively because we got there very late. They came as late as yesterday at 5. And I think, you know, previously the committee has taken a strong strain about, you know, this kind of engagement that we have. More so when it's the first engagement, it becomes unfair on the portfolio members to substantively contribute to a presentation when the documents were delayed. And I'll request you that you emphasize that point so that it does not, you know, the first interaction shouldn't be acrimonious on the basis that documents were late, but, you know, it affects how we make our contributions. We end up not making, you know, key input that we can simply because we haven't had sufficient time, as is required, to engage those documents. Thank you.
I'm very sorry because I was off sick last week. I didn't want to comment because I was thinking that you did get a document. Myself as a citizen, I'm getting it this morning. So I was thinking the entire committee, whilst I was sick last week, they did get it. It's a norm of this committee that we don't want to interact with documents on the day because we want to read, we want to have facts. So in future, we do ask you that please forward the documents in order that members must read. So I didn't say anything because I was not aware when did this document arrive. So we don't take very nice documents that are presented on the same day. Monday is a constituency day, we are not in parliament. So the business of parliament is ended on Friday. At least if on Monday to Friday we can have documents in order that during the weekend we will read documents, but not on a Friday that there's no one in parliament afternoon. It's worse on Monday. Monday is not parliamentary day, it's a constituency day. So we are pleading that not again. Thank you for that, Honorable Malaj. Honorable. I've got these people who are going to be. Okay. Okay, Mr. Maliga, after you is going to be Honorable Sultan.
Thank you, Chair, and Honorable Sultan, for allowing me to go before you. And, Chairperson, it is the main concern for this committee to see transformation taking place with all sporting codes, especially in the rural areas where most of the sporting codes are not seen. And my worry with swimming, I've heard that they are also worried, like all other sporting codes, about the issue of the facilities. But I don't know how much are they prepared to improvise. Like, you see, soccer is mostly played everywhere. Not that there are no facilities, but it's because, especially in rural areas, you just put the two sticks, this side and the other side, where there is an empty space. The boys will start playing until they develop a particular talent. So I wonder, because if we were to talk about swimming facilities, especially in schools, you are looking at swimming pools, which I don't think overnight we can have all schools having swimming pools. So my concern is as to how far is swimming prepared to improvise, like I've made an example with football, to use I don't know whether dams and the sea, because swimming takes place. I'm not a swimmer. But because I would go to the river and develop a particular skill, I mean a skill, I can cross the river. When you drop in the river, I can swim. Therefore, I would think that if maybe swimming was utilized, especially along the coast, we have got a sea, and I think for a person to swim, we need to take the person to the water and teach the person how to swim. So that's what I want to check, because especially when you go along the coast, there is a sea, but we don't see swimming South Africa utilizing the sea to teach, especially where we come from in the rural areas. We are concerned as this sport about club development. We would want to know as to how far is swimming also prepared to follow other federations, because as when we're talking transformation, we have not seen it. I must say, it still looks like a white thing, especially because it is an urban thing. You will find swimming pools in the urban areas, and you will not find swimming pools in the rural areas. So if we were to wait for the schools to have those facilities, it means it's still going to take us many years before we can begin to see rural children being taught how to swim. Thank you.
Thank you,
Honorable
Sultan.
Thank you, sir. Well, I look at the matter from a somewhat different perspective. I would prefer to be a realist here. And being a realist sometimes does not make you a popular person, let me declare. I've played sports. The most important thing in sport is to play it. It is also important to be an administrator. But if just because you've graduated from being
a place to bring an administrator means that you have got to suffer the punishment. Then you lose the appetite to do, to give even your best in that administration. And that is the rest of life. I've gone through that process myself. Now, as much as from a political perspective, transformation is an agenda in South Africa, but I think one needs to be realistic here and say, I concede that when it comes to civil South Africa, if transformation translates or has necessarily to include large numbers of Africans, then there is a problem which is beyond you. Definitely, no, because you don't have a budget. There isn't a culture in South Africa of Africans training that much. My own father discouraged me from swimming in a local jam. He said, I will swim. That's many, many years ago. So even if we, as a community, because we're an extension of parliament, would expect you to be very, very precise when it comes to transformation, I understand your problem. We don't have a budget, a relative budget to give you, but we expect you to effect transformation. And I don't think that is a very realistic solution. My question to you is, to what extent have you gone out to advocate to make sure that you have got large numbers, a large pool of potential swimmers, using your champions? Because another way of being effective when you do advocacy is to inspire people. Let the kids say, I want to be the next generation triathlete. That would inspire them. To what extent do you spend your budget doing that so that you get inspiration? But I would even challenge myself on that and say, look at soccer. It's not an issue. Transformation is no longer an issue there. You have got Afghans by the tens of thousands. But what is the performance that you see on the part of Bafana Bafana? So you have got this challenge of, is it numbers that will up the grade, or is it quality that you input? So when next time you do your strategic planning, I suggest you look at those issues to be primarily concerned of, because transformation is a process. At this point in time, do you want to build numbers so that you're seen to be transforming, or do you want to build quality so that you have got the few that you are able, you know, to say, with the few Africans that are in the team that are swimming, we have been able to produce champions. Structure your budget accordingly. The last point is, have you found that Africans have got an appetite? Have you ever done a survey? Formal survey. Because you can spend millions of rents trying to woo them. But fundamentally, are they interested? That is the realistic situation. I've been a facilitator, development facilitator, for over 10 years. And that's why I'm coming up with this question. You could be saying, we've got this challenge to transform people, but are they interested in swimming better? There is a difference between having an opportunity to be assailed and actually showing an appetite to do something. I suggest you check on that. Maybe this time, let's say, you'll have a more quality report, you know, when for us, and then we can be render you better quality support. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Sultan. Honorable Manana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, let me start here by congratulations, Trustee Klaus, as a swimmer of the year. And the issue of gender, Chairperson, I can see I'm in pride of this. They are all men, no female in this delegation. So I'll start. I can see the clash with sponsorship in their challenges, transformation, and facilities. I'll start with the sponsorship issue. On the sponsorship issue, Chairperson, I can see swimming South Africa was been struggling to find sponsorship that has been led them to ask their athletes to pay for themselves to participate in the world champion, including the same ones in Russia. That how many athletes did they take to championship, and how many did they won? Did they get medals? And how many athletes in their Sashcock OPEX program? And another one is how many athletes who went to Russia pay for themselves, and how did they do? That's my question on the sponsorship issues. And on the transformation question, I can think they've mentioned these challenges to their presentation. Swimming was the transformation is very slowly. This is an evidence from the APG. the EPG was here in their report, their recent South African, the recent South African national champion, how many black people achieved the top 16 ranking? What support have they received? And in the facilities, the Mpumalanga swimming having got a serious challenge because now they are not they're not participating in anything. If they have to do trainings, they have to travel plus minus 2 kilometers to for their training in Middelburg. Since they have challenge with their facility, whereby I think they have some problems with the municipality because they are not, the municipality is not cooperating with the swimming. Where they are doing their upgrade. So they are hosting the annual event. But the whole season there will be no participants in they will not participating in any swimming training unless they have to travel to meet with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Manana. Honorable Soma.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. May I start by welcoming the presentation, very good and very informative, really. As far as the Africans are concerned, I'm sure you have got a very uphill problem in getting this swimming starting. As we know from the previous regime, our schools will, for a long, long time, you know, have the sports because of the facilities. Particularly, as we say, in the rural area and in the townships. They are very large townships. I mean, I come from Durban. There is she there, very wide townships, Umlazi in Sefwamashu, and they hardly a swimming pool in Wansa. I remember I come Umlazi, big township, one swimming pool. When my children grew up in the townships, I also discouraged them from going to it. Because they built one township to survive at Lamonde, and there were no coaches, one coach, and so many children, you know, so anyway, several incidences of drowning. So I know it's going to be a very uphill you know, problem in swimming pool. Two, there is, in South Africa, we are a water-stricken country. When we're thinking of building swimming pools, it is a very expensive position. I remember when I'm a board member of Nanda Seminary in Shepperton. We suggested a swimming pool for the children, and the first thing was, where are we going to get water? Mm-hmm. If we've got water that is rationed, we get it once at night, and I mean it's closed at night and only during the day. If we pull that empty and so on. So there are several projects to this swimming that we are talking about. When we're talking about the sea, you know, we've got plenty of seas around there and so on. You always hear on the television how many children or how many people get into Durban for swimming during the season and the problems there are of people, you know, either getting drowning and so on because there are no courses. They are over, you know, they should be overwhelmed by the number of people that come to. But it's very, very difficult. Having said so, okay, the problem is that our children have got to start swimming earlier in their age. When we spoke about, you know, the swimming pool at another seminary where I'm a board member, they were even worried the children come into the school at the age of 14. They are saying the children should start very early in their age. So let's say, you know, they then pursue this, you know, this. So I think the problem of just educating the public, because they can go to these public swimming pools at leisure, not only seasonally and so on, so that they learn swimming earlier in the India. So my input was that really, I'm sure you are doing your best, but at the moment, the circumstances around swimming for especially Africans is very difficult.
Thank you, Honorable Zoma.
Thank you, Jefferson. I don't know Jefferson, but I'm not as like as Mr. Madika, Honorable Madika and Mazomo. I come from the Indian, I'm from the Karahari, from the shade. There is no water, you know, drinking water, we struggle with it. Yeah, no, if you drop me in the sea, you know, if we happen to have any, I'll drown within a minute. But I'm saying, look, even if we are from the Karahari, there is this passion of sin. There is this thing that is in that is so innate in us and in our children. If you can go there in rural, very deep rural areas, and look at children singing in the dance, you know, muddy dance. Your heart goes out for them, you know, those children, you know, that is him, and go out from the married them, go home, and get walloped, like Honorable Sultan said, that you've been seen in an unsafe death. I'm saying, that if we are not careful in this country, in sports, we are going to have a situation at a certain point, where we have, you know, entirely developed the urban area and left behind the rural area. And I don't think by then we would be speaking transformation, because we'd be still struggling with developing rural areas. I'm saying this, and I'm wondering, you President, has spoken about the land to clean, the development of slums, the 60% of black focus. I don't know. I'm not sure. I really doubt it. But I've not heard it in any of the rural areas that I've gone to. There are far deep rural areas representing you to ignore that. And I don't think that even you as the officials have ever set your foot there. At this and now, they stand a chance of not being developed even after 20 or 40 years of our democracy. Now, I'm saying it's represented. Inasmuch as we struggle with transformation, let's not forget the rural areas. They have not been transformed. Nothing has been done in rural areas. And this is my only contribution. I'm not saying the person that we should not develop our urban areas and townships. But I'm saying let us not forget about rural areas. Go to Bizana, go to where the Chesan, Kunu, go to Angulu, go to Bonabona, where I come from. Absolutely nothing. There is absolutely nothing. Even here in the Western Cape, there are deep rural areas which are not developed. But I'm saying, Chairperson, we can, you know, try to develop and develop things simultaneously, you know, in the same way. I understand the your financial constraints, but saying let us do something about rural areas. I think, Chairperson.
No, I also welcome the presentation. I think mostly you have read my mind, because for me, I also think that it's more about access. It's not about others being African and therefore being scared of water. It's because they recognize that opportunity. For donkey years. That is why they are not skilled on swimming and so on. So we need to open that access. Government does have a progress. And we are happy that all the sporting federations have come on board, endorse the National Sport and Recreation Plan. So that is why we are engaging with you, because we know that you have had, you have agreed with the Transformation Charter, you have agreed with the targets that are set up in the National Sport and Recreation Plan. At the moment, the department is ensuring that all the sporting bodies must comply. So far, 5 sporting bodies have signed. Now we are busy with FEDA 16. We are among the FEDA 16. So from where we are sitting, we are going to use that scientific approach that the EPG is utilizing to judge you whether you are making a difference in terms of transformation. From our side, as the Oversight Committee for Sport, we will put pressure on key stakeholders, local municipalities. We'll put pressure there to ensure that they should make available facilities. We'll also put pressure on the treasurer that more facilities must be built. So we think next time when we interact with you, we'll be utilizing those scientific approaches. We know you'll be sitting one-to-one with the EPG, because that is the body that we have agreed that we need an independent body to take you through. So we are ahead with that, and we can see that you are touching key areas that are emphasized in the plan, like the school sport and that development. So we'll be monitoring and evaluating you on that basis. The only thing that I want to ask so that we can clarify is the issue around the criteria. Because at one point, the criteria for your elite athletes, it appeared that there was some kind of a misunderstanding between us and the National Council, the Confederation, NASCOC, on the criteria. Whether it's any affairs themselves who did not agree, but if you can clarify that, because it was a key thing in the recent, I think about the 12 months or so. So that is my case here, that we need to just be careful to end up at this stage 21 years later, end up wanting to say, you know, that the problem is Africans are not right for swimming. It's not true. It is because of apartheid, that legacy. It has created certain sporting codes to become white, that certain people can't play those sporting codes. Whereas it was more lack of access to those sporting codes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I've got some few questions before our visitors respond. I didn't get too correctly and clear that those grants were saying that we are depending on grants from government. What kind of grants do you have budget from government, or in your picture where you have indicated about financial history, I don't get you correctly and clear whether these are your grants where you've set income, expenses, new profit, and also we are saying that sometimes you do depend from lotus. So I want that we must be clear what government is giving you, what the lotus is giving you, because when you are saying that kids are depending on parents, what kind of sport really, that which means only those parents that they can do, those who cannot, they cannot, and you are saying that you do increase the affiliation. So really, the kids from Mpeko and Nkunu and Mpanduli, they can't manage to do that. I want you that you must clear in order that you must interact with you correctly. You know, Christians, as other members have said, drowning is one of the problems. Some of us who are rural women and girls then, we do go to the sea during the Christmas or New Year, and the majority of people who are drowned in those seas is the rural kids and rural women and men. I'm saying, for instance, if I'm from
Umkanduli, they are even better because they are free coffee beans. But if we are in Kulu and Amchat, there's no sea. The only thing are rivers. It's not, I can't say that we can take our kids, the coaches, go to the river. The river are very deep. How can you train somebody in the river? I once told in Maria said, we nearly drowned, but about four kids were drowned. I was asking to this young gentleman next to me, what is Isiziba in Isilungu? Is he saying that it's the river stream or the river banks? Because we're seeing that green, slowly water, which was very nice. And then we got in thinking that, what nice water is this? And my father was saying that, oh, who are you? Is the Isiziba? And really, there was a snake in that river, in that water. About four kids were drowned, and when they are out of that, they were having small stars here that they were bitten by the snake. So this only thing that we are knowing that we can go to the river, but there are rivers that you must not go and swim. So I'm asking, you are in trouble. Machine wants transformation, but as people who are looking at South Africa swimmers, how are you going to manage? Like in Amthatha, we have Amthatha High School where the pool is only there in that area. Amthatha is a biggest town, and it's only one school who's got a swimming pool. I'm suspecting your problem is very unique. It needs us, when we're criticizing this problem of transformation, we must not be alone. Because in most areas, even in urban areas, we don't have swimming pools. And that's the problem. So when we're discussing these 5 years that it's still going to be this committee, we are very strong on transformation. But I'm suspecting that we have a unique situation in as South Africa, that would love to assist, and that even those kids who are from rural areas, for instance, Honorable Malika, he is correct that in rural areas for his soccer, they can just play in the ordinary field. But what we are doing, we don't agree with that during this time, saying that those who are responsible for assisting, we must see them going and develop fields in our rural areas. And they are doing that, your super sport, your sport, whoever. We are emphasizing that we want to see them transforming in the rural areas. We don't know how are we going to say if we don't even have funds to transport swimmers to go anywhere. How are we going to say, let's build swimming pools in our areas, Kalahari Desert. We can say we are building swimming pools. Where are we going to get water? As we are sitting here, all of us in South Africa, we know that we have special water. Every day there are challenges and matches that people, they want water to drink themselves. So I do feel pity for you, but you must not fold arms, come to us. And if you have ideas that we must, as an oversight committee, that we must assist, we are all yours all these 5 years. With those words, can you answer some questions? I think teacher of you.
Thank you very much. Let's first start off with the question about our lead document. We'd like to apologize for that. We'll make sure that it's our document comes in time, give you sufficient time to go through it. Okay, I'd like to start off, there's a lot of overlapping questions. The first question I'd like to start is the issue about Africans' appetite for swimming. And so, let's be very clear about this. This is a legacy issue. It's about access to resources and taking the options for children, doesn't matter whatever color, whatever their class status, it's about creating those opportunities. Now, when I used to swim many years ago, some of the national champions in the federation I came from African countries. So it was a question of opportunity. Some of the world-class swimmers and the former NEC in the North Cape, Brian Marnus, was the top 25 in the world in his time. Now, the world has obviously changed where swimming is now
a two-year program with heated facilities, etc. But it's not about a race issue. I mean, there's studies and people have shown about bone density and black people can't float and etc., etc. This is about purely about creating opportunities for children in our country to swim. We are seeing where you put money and invest in children, no matter what their color, that those children rise to perform. Now, Amlazi, yes, they might have one swimming pool, but there was a child from Amlazi in team in Luanda that won a medal in Luanda. So it is possible. So this is not about whether African children can swim or not. Now, we've got an independent study. Here's the perception. The perception is people see the national team and it's white. Now, let's forget about white. If you look at our national team in terms of swimmers that qualify, purely on time, because you've got to make a time to get into the team. This year for the championships, it's going to be in Russia in July, end of July this year, only five swimmers in the entire country, only five swimmers make the qualifying time. That's black or white. Now, that is a challenge about access to resources and investing in athletes. And so, if we want to turn that around, it's about how we invest. Now, from a swimming point, you're not seeing African children in the national team at this point. You're seeing them, I've shown you, in the junior teams. They get in there and they are holding their own. Now, from a BMI study, this is an independent study that was done, swimming is one of the fastest growing sports in the country. And we can see that African children are starting to swim at these multi schools, because that's where they are. But converting them from a child that can swim at the school level into a competitive swimmer at a club or national level requires investment, because they've got to go to national competitions, they've got to race, there's a cost for all this. And unless parents get, and pay for a coach, because school coaches are not going to coach at the standard to take them to the next level. And that's the challenge we have. So this is not about African people not having the appetite to swim. It's about, as a country, we have the money to invest in nurturing and developing the talent. Now, the issue about rules, and I spoke about it and said, from swimming point, we don't cry anymore, or for swimming, we don't have money. So, from a swimming point, we've gone into some of the rural areas, limited, of course, by the constraints about our resources. So we put in portable swimming pools, because we've gone to areas where we've built facilities with a lot of funding at some point, but the cost is the maintenance of it. Who pays for the maintenance? And there isn't in some of the municipalities the revenue base to pay for the maintenance. So we put portable pools in some areas. And we can show you, it's teaching children to swim as a life skill. So while, yes, we'd like the education department to do this, it's not what this is here, Madam Chair, that we've suffered. We've been accused of going in and stealing children because we want to teach them. Right? So we've gone in and we've put in portable pools, we've engaged with principals, and we can show you this. Those facilities are teaching children to be able to swim as a life skill, and they can then choose whether they want to swim, they want to dive. It's creating opportunities for those youngsters now to go and get jobs as lifeguards, to work in the Navy. It's opening a whole range of opportunities. They may not become swimmers, but I think swimming is part of the fabric of this country. And transformation is not a challenge that we face in swimming alone. If you look at various structures in this country, the lack of transformation from an economic and social point is stark. We see that every day. So we have those programs. We have programs specifically targeting swimming in rural areas in Ghana, because that's where the drowning is happening. The vast majority of drownings are happening in dams and rivers and the sea. And there's only two reasons for that. Either because children like to swim and go into those water, and drowning because they don't have the skill, or because somebody's pushing them into the water to drown. Now, you go to any dam or river in summer, anywhere in the country, and you see children will go there, will be there. That's the reality. So it's about children wanting to swim. How do we convert that? So we have a program called Rural Splash, where we actually teach instructors to demarcate areas safely, so children are not caught by currents, etc., and be able to teach the child what to do as a basic skill to make sure they're safe in the water and can enjoy the water. Now, swimming's gone also not just in terms of swimming, in terms of pool swimming. We have open water swimming. So they put in for the Midmar Dam, etc., where people are starting to swim in dams and rivers, and you can encourage that and go there. So, but the first step of that is, even in the rural area, the child has to be able to swim. So you know, us, we don't want to put a child in a situation where it's going to endanger the child's life. And that would be wrong.
So even training an instructor or a coach, you've got to teach the person to swim before they can. Otherwise, you're going to endanger the child. So there's a number of steps you have to put in place to do that. So for us, getting into the schools is critical, and that part is supposed to has to change. And I think, you know, the BMI study shows, you know, there's large numbers of children, and it's about the setting that black people goes from. And we hear that all the time. And that's why we're engaged with SABC, for example. We've been forcing them to have the swimming programs, not on the channels where there's largely white people looking at it. It's about making sure that people that don't swim are looking at these games and saying, this is something else I'd like to do. And it's about changing those perceptions. So it's a fine line about the quantity and the quality. If we continue to focus on quantity share, you know, it's simple numbers. You know, the people that are swimming form a very small portion of this, the population in this country. And if we continue to only focus on that community, the numbers and the opportunities for developing and nurturing talent in the future will radically disappear. So you can't only focus a few people. It's how we grow that and keep the balance right. Yes, gender delegation is again a constraint. We've got Dave, Brian, because he's here. We have some executive members on our structure that are women, but from a participation point, swimming is fairly much a sport that's fairly equal in gender participation. But again, from a performance point, we struggle. Because if you look at the likes of Chad and Cameron, they swim past their schooling brilliance. And we have the same challenge with black kids and women. Once they finish school, you know, swimming is not going to be a career and give you a job. And unless you can find a way of supporting them and keeping them in, we lose that talent. So it's a challenge we have with women as well. Around the sponsorship, the team hasn't gone to Russia yet. It only goes later this year. And what we've done is we get funds from SRSA, etc. for some, but they're in place for certain amounts. And what we've tried to do today is with the funds that we get from SRA is to support athletes that can't afford to go. It's a very small amount. By sending a team to Russia, for example, we send teams in five disciplines, and it's a fair amount. It's over $1.5 million to send the entire team of Senegi athletes, because we've got swimmers, we've got water polo, diving, synchro swimming, open water swimming. So we get some subsidies from the International Federation, which the swimmer take. But for example, for swimming, you can't take the team the day before the event starts. You need a few days to acclimatize, to prepare, to get ready. And that's a cost. So they contribute to that. And where we don't have funds, we try to use the subsidies you're getting from SRSA for high performance. We also engage with the provincial structures to access funding from provincial sports locations. So at the national level, we don't actually fund, but we try to fund that. From an OPEX point, we have four athletes currently on OPEX funding, and those athletes are funded by SESCO, and we're very, very grateful for that. That makes a big difference to that. We're certainly hopeful that we will come back with some medals in the swimming program when we come back. The issue about Mpumalanga and the issue you said about the facility, that's an ongoing challenge we find. It's not just Mpumalanga, it's in Mpopo. We've had exactly, they've had no facility. They've been going to other parts of the country to swim. It's an ongoing challenge about facilities, about facilities being maintained, going out of operation, and it's a daily struggle. Hopefully we'll also raise it in Sheskok as to engage with Shalda. But again, if you don't have facilities, you're not going to have swimmers. And that's why we see most of our talented swimmers are coming from urban areas. And what tends to happen is if they are very talented athletes, they move quickly to the urban areas where they can access those resources, their parents can afford to do that. And that's a challenge that the issue about facilities is an expense. And we have to look at it. And that's why, with the portable programs, a smaller facility, in most cases, the principals get so excited they put the pool into a classroom. So, in addition to being a swimming program, it takes on a life of its own in terms of other education programs around it. But the resource in terms of water, in terms of maintenance, is far cheaper than building a swimming pool. I think I've spoken about the dams and rural areas. I think that's a challenge that we face. We're not being to all rural areas, we've been to some of them. But again, even with a simple facility like a portable pool, we found if we go to the deep rural areas, simple things like maintenance of the pool is the cost in terms of keeping it going. So that's something we've been engaging with. And here I think the one issue is just not about building the facility, but when you have the facility, about putting the resources in to run the program. So paying for a coach or somebody that can run the program for children is critical, because in the rural areas or in the townships, there's no funding to pay for a coach like you would have in the township or in the Model C school, where in most of the schools, the school pays for the coach. So there's a permanent coach that's employed. Now, our schools don't have that kind of resources to do that. And we would welcome your engagement with Treasury around the mid-funding and also get us more money. but I'd like to reiterate, around the issue of our transformation, I think we find to do everything we can within the constraints we have, and we will continue to do that, because we firmly believe that every child in this country must be able to swim, and that there's far more challenge. You look at the talent that we're able to deliver, the small pool of swimmers that we currently have. Can you imagine the opportunities for this country if every child in the country can swim? And that's what we want to achieve. In terms of the selection criteria, I think our selection criteria from a swimming point, and it is a very conscious decision, it's not about just making sure that everybody that comes to a national competition goes and swims. We said that from a swimming point, we've got to set the bar at a level where we want world-class performance. So if you look at the Olympic Games, we're top six in the world. Now that's our 210 countries that take part in swimming across the world. If you set your standard at an average level, you will get average performances. And we firmly believe that as South Africans, it's not about us being mediocre. It's about being world-class, we have the talent, we have the skills, and we firmly believe that we can deliver world-class standards. We've got to set the bar high enough. Our coaches have risen to that opportunity and have delivered athletes. And also our swimmers have continued to do that. So our criteria is guided by making sure that we continue to deliver the world-class performances, but also about the long-term future. So we've looked at what happens across the world. What are Americans and Australians doing? Because they are the leading countries in swimming. And we've tried to adapt our standards and criteria to make sure the teams we set are slowly trying to focus on that. There's a long-term participant development program that we've developed specifically for swimming together with SASOP that looks at the various age levels of what children need to be doing so that they're ready to compete internationally in long-term. And our criteria, the lens we put on our competition program, are geared towards that, to deliver performance, not just for the Olympic Games for next year, but for the Olympic Games in 8 years' time. So, and that's a long-term investment. The constant issue is about the black swimming. I think, again, I want to reinforce with this. There's been swimming in black communities for years. We may not have discussed from an international stage, but there's communities that are swimming regularly from a recreational point, but there's also the competitive swimming from the mid-50s that people have been swimming at a competitive level in this country. And then again, I think I spoke about the grants thing. The grants become SRSA, we've been using it to subsidize people. And it's a very tough challenge about, do you stop sending a team across? I know in terms of football, the unpaid team hadn't gone because they've got no money. But if we do that, okay, we cut off the future development and performance of our teams going forward in the future. So it's this constant balance of how do we manage the resources we have, how do we access resources from, and swimming at the one spectrum are the parents who are able to afford to some extent to support their children. And how do we manage that balance and track that? So those that have their support and contribute, and where we can access resources to support children that can't afford to do, how do we do that and make sure that we make swimming continue to go and win medals in the future. I think I've answered most of the questions. I missed something.
Thank you.
Another
question.
Yes, ma'am. I think I just want to ask a very specific question about, say, about the funding from SRS in Lotto. Just to give you an idea, we got the most funding from SRS in 2012, close to 4 million rand, which then reduced over the next 3 years to now, where it's gone to 1.8 million. So it's reduced, not dramatically, but it's been reducing gradually. Then in terms of the national lotteries was, at the end of the Olympic cycle, you know, federations were allocated 8 million per annum, right? That was kept in the last 4 years at 2 million per federation, right? So that's a drop in 6 million rand, right? So obviously it impacted on a lot of our programs, right? Some of the programs the president was talking about, the rural splash programs, our portable pool programs, we've had to scale some of it down. We've had to scale down some of our performance support. A lot of that resources we used to subsidize teams. So, you know, we had to make the decision, as our president said, do we stop international participation because we can't fund it, or do we rather say, we'll give you the opportunity to select a team, but the cost for us is going to be this. It's not that we pay everything. We still subsidize a portion of it where we can. And so I just wanted to give you feedback on the SRSA and Lotto. I think that's what you asked.
Yes, I wanted to ask the order that we must see the auditor statement, whom you account for those amounts. I was asking that to what the oversight role, that if the department is giving one of entities the money they need to know how are you using it. But with the the input offering that will be engaging with Treasure, this department is the least department to get a budget. We are not yet succeeding. I don't know whether I was going to succeed to negotiate for you for more funds whilst we are still struggling to have our own budget as a department. Because if you do understand, this board has got a little budget. This committee, we have tried to engage the Treasurer, but all in vain. But we have said we cannot not let it go like that. So you must not have big hopes, because even with us as a department, we don't have much budget and we are trying. But how are we going to build this social cohesion? I've seen the hand.
Thank you very much, sir. I'd just like to address myself to the issue of the support that our federation has been receiving from government so far. I think we must applaud the South African government and the department particularly in terms of the resources that have been invested in SIM so far. Where our challenge lies is the absence of corporate South Africa. I think from time immemorial, if there's a sporting federation that makes this country proud, is the amount of gold medals and other types of medals that we bring back from the international championships, including the Olympics. And I think the point needs to be made that whilst we understand the challenges that the government, especially the social challenges that government is facing, there's also an outcry for the private sector to be able to partner with government in ensuring that they contribute effectively to the social transformation, and particularly in this instance, understanding how sports can be used as a catalyst in terms of ensuring that we achieve some of the objectives that we set ourselves. Quite disturbing that when these athletes come back with successes that they have achieved internationally, the private companies are the first who wants to latch onto those athletes and use them in the form of endorsements for their companies and their products. And yet, when time comes for them to be supporting the federation and those the athletes, they know where to be seen. So I think the point is to be made that corporate South Africa will have to be held responsible in ensuring that they are assisting us to a large extent. I think that's the point that I just needed to make. Thank you.
Okay,
thank you. Sure, I just want to answer your question in terms of the orders. I think our, from a swimming point, our finances are audited every year and presented to our annual general meeting. It's independent audit, external auditors, and also we regularly get audited, as you said, we got audited by the Auditor General as well, to make sure that he's spending the money in the allocations there. So the one thing I just want to say, I'd like to just echo the sentiments of Ziggy in terms of the support from sports and recreation. I know their budgets are very small. The funding we've got from SRS over the last few years has been pretty much constant in line with their budgets. In 2012, we've got an additional grant to support us in preparation for for the Olympic Games. So the 4 million you saw at that point was specifically in preparation for Olympic Games. But it's been pretty much around 1.82 million rand over the last 2 years, Jeffrey Buck. And that's in line with what you said here around your budget has not been very big. And we understand that, but I think we also have to change the image that sport is purely about winning medals. And I think the issue around the role sports plays in society and getting that across is critical, around health, around discipline of the youth, around job creation, and around social cohesion are critical issues that we need to sell. So it's not purely about we want money to win medals.
Let me take this opportunity to thank you. You were just open and share with us your problems and your progress. The only thing that was raised by Honorable Manana, I'm suspecting that Honorable Malaga was going to share on the question of gender. I've got about two young members of this committee. They don't take it kind if we're an executive of the male. And also as a gender activity, you know what? This 50-50, we're not playing, we want it. We no longer want to go to push it in the kitchen. Go and look on your presentation when you come to Parliament. You can even take them anywhere. We don't want to accept the question of there is a feeling that you umziwe imbizo. We have got this from Usharu. Usharu, they were men like you only. It's not a dog. Gender issues must be addressed. We are taking very offended if there are people who are coming this moment without women. With that note, we are releasing you in our next agenda. The thing is consideration of our minutes matter arising. You can be excused. Thank you so much that you have come to us for we are going to research. I suspect you left with one meeting on 23rd of eternity and then going to research. Thank you so much.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Chair, may I just say one thing? I'm from the West, okay? And so I'm here because of the funding, so they asked me to come and chat to you on this meeting. I'm a volunteer, I've been in the sport for 15 years. We run on Women's Day a program where we bring all the ladies from the townships, we bring them to a heated facility. They also bring their kids with them, and I'm looking here now in the Western Cape. We take them to the Blue Downs pool because that's the only facility we can use. We use the pool for the whole day. We take the mothers, we educate them about swimming, we put them in the water, we do water aerobics for them, so we make them very tired. So when they go home to their husbands, they just sleep. We also teach them about all the other good things in life, and we feed them and the kids, and we do that on an annual basis, so we are looking after the ladies. I just like to thank you.
You must take the details, because he raised something which disturbed me of the sexual harassment of those people who is looking the researcher. Can you take and our secretary in a serious note, can you take the numbers of the member? Because I'm suspecting that we need to conduct you as a committee, stretching meetings in order that we must look at your work as a committee, maybe visiting those people whom we assisted. But what is your intake, the Honourable Member?
I agree, Chair. You see that I was taken aback by the comments that were made towards the end, and I thought it's all in good spirit, but I think we're also dealing with a fundamental misunderstanding of what gender equality and gender empowerment is. And I think, you know, because I thought the debate, the briefing has been closed, but this was sparked by the comments that were made, that this whole notion that to be empowerment is to have a one-day dedicated to women and young girls to keep them on one-day skills. It's not genuine gender equality. We need to have a substantive program of gender equality, of encouraging young girls, and even at the executive level, how they plan to address the issue of gender imbalance in there, so that we don't intervene from a conceptually flawed understanding of what gender empowerment is. Thank you.
We are taking gender issues very serious in this committee very soon. When we are coming from research, we'll call CGE, Commission on Gender, in order that we need to monitor and do oversight on them. Thank you. That's what I was saying, that this is the youngest member and this member, Honorable Malachi and Honorable Mamana and the Honorable Bachman, they don't accept question of gender. If gender is not only women, it's men and women, young men and young women. We need to see the true reflection of South Africa. Thank you so much with the information. Thank you very much. Honorable members, can you go to the minutes of the such date? Where are our minutes? 7 June. Honorable members, today we are going to interact with our minutes. I'm seeing our visitors, they even interested in our minutes. This is democracy. Anyone can get in parliament and listen to everything. This is a very interesting day that the cameras are with us when we are discussing our minutes. Welcome. This is Sport and Recreation Committee. We don't have any problem. I'm not hiding anything. Let's go to page 1 for correction. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Did you read the minutes? Okay. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Page 8. Page 9. And page 10. Let's go to matters arising, starting from page 1. Page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, they are not doing, page 6, page 7, page 8. In page 8, I wanted to check that we've gave a mandate to 3 honorable members. Have done that of listening to the recording tape. Can we get a response? Honorable Malachi.
I did say, and that it's not conclusive. You know, that's the bottom line. The recording in itself is not conclusive, and I think, you know, given the nature of the input at the time and the lack of clarity about, you know, how we then move forward if it's been moved and then it's being that, I think, you know, I'll leave it to Honorable Valhoma to make the conclusion. But it's, in fairness, it's not conclusive. That's the bottom line. One can lead it whichever way they want to conclude. And I don't want to put words into his mouth in the same way that I wouldn't want Honorable Valhoma to put words into my mouth. But it's not conclusive, so would be guided by what Honorable Valhoma has to say in tandem with the input from the rest of the council.
Is it assisting us, this response, Honorable Valhoma?
No, Chair, listen, it is not conclusive, so maybe we should delete that, or just note it and not make it a recommendation. Because in terms of the transcript, it's not the condition.
Honourable members, what are you saying, Honourable Manas?
Just to avoid repeating the same mistake as we did with that particular issue, I want to get what Honourable Valhoma is suggesting, because I want to second it, but I want to be sure that he's moving or he's suggesting, so that we don't have again that issue of you know, the language and what the formal communication is, so that we, if he moves for the deletion of that part, I have no issues, because in hindsight and having listened to it, it's not conclusive.
No, Chair, let's delete it. I'm proposing.
Honorable Malas, thank you, Honorable Member. Your resolve is admirable, but we must note that we must not again have handling not clarifying issues, because that's why I was saying that we cannot not to accept the means which are not the true reflection. But in future, we need to correct that. Thank you so much. Page 9, Dr. Timmerland. Honorable Malas.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I've been guided by the minutes. I just want us to reflect again on the submission that I made to you and the fact that it will be reassessed again at the portfolio committee, at least in every portfolio committee, and that subsequent to last week when we dealt with it, there's been very revealing developments on this issue. And what informed the decision then was what we knew, but what we know now is more than what we knew then. And I wanted to again put it on the table that the committee interrogates this issue of calling the Suffolk Presidency and members that are involved with the Bid Commission to NGTS, so that we can intervene based on our parliamentary responsibilities rather than being spectators on this matter. And that committee makes a call, because in that minute...
I'm coming at this stage because it is important that we should respect what we said in the last meeting. In the last meeting, we said as soon as the time allows, we'll call whoever as the committee we are supposed to call. So whoever made that deliberation, and it's most unfortunate that somebody within this committee created a problem and said certain key stakeholders are coming to this meeting today. And that makes it difficult for us to deliberate on the matter at hand, because that matter we need to be in a position to then deliberate as the committee and ensure that we determine as the committee our own agenda. We can't have a situation whereby our agenda will be determined by what is written in the newspapers and the media. So I'm going to find it difficult that we must, given that confusion that was stated by one of our own members here, and because the media is here, we won't even be in a position to even determine who is that member that created that problem of inviting the media that certain key stakeholders from South or from the big committee are going to come to this meeting today, whereas the chairperson did not know that. So it creates a problem, and that is why I'm raising on a point of order, Chair.
Honorable Manana, you must all lift your hand that you know that we are on page 9. That page 9 must, is it a true reflection of the discussion? Don't keep any other things. Just now we are in page 9, where we discuss a letter of Honorable Malatsa as the committee. That Honorable Malatsa did write a letter to me as the chairperson, and I refer the letter to the committee saying that I'm not a chairperson of my own. The only thing that the chairperson has done on behalf of the committee is to issue the statement. That statement, which was in the air, in the media, saying that we concur with what the minister is saying. Then Honorable Malatsa went to the podium of parliament saying that he wrote a letter to me. I was not then seeing the letter. Then when the letter arrived on Tuesday, I presented the letter in the committee. I'm saying what in page 9. In page 9, I wanted that, are there any corrections? I'm seeing corrections. I want somebody to see that he has got a correction in page 9. Whoever is going to talk will talk on page 9.
Chair, some correction of the Ministry on matters arising, and Honorable Malatsa is raising this as an issue arising from the Ministry.
No, you're right. Well, on the matters arising, and the matter arising is on this page, Honorable Malatsa, Honorable Malatsa, Honorable Maliga, Honorable on that order, you must all be cool and give everyone a chance to put his or her input, and I'll take the lead after that.
On a point of procedure, you had recognized me and then there was a point of order, and I haven't finished my whatever I was saying, and you haven't made a ruling on the point of order in relation to what I was saying, because I hadn't finished what I was saying.
No, you were raising a point of order. Also, man, I was noting them as you were speaking, there was a hand. Oh, Honorable, you raised a point of order. I'm saying the point of order sustained, but let's hear and you finish what you are going to say according to page 9.
Thanks, Stefan. Chair, I think it is a very important distinction here of procedure, and we explained it very well. And I was referring to what's in the minutes, and that is based on the fact that the last sentence on the minute in page 10 says that the motion on page 9, but it goes to that point. It's based on that, so I'm combining them together because it was on page 9, that the motion was introduced at the committee meeting every Tuesday. It was where I was coming from. But second to that, Chair, there's been two misleading statements that have been made about me, and I take great exception to that because those are misleading. They are misleading in the sense that I went out as a member of committee. It wasn't stated clearly, but it was in response to meetings that I addressed to that a member of the committee that went out and I said, people who are here, you can ask them now. They're here on their own accord, their interest. But I thought it was unfair.
Honorable Malatsa, I didn't hear anyone saying that, Honorable Malatsa. It's only me who mentioned you. Please, you are out of order now. Of course, I didn't hear anyone here, Honorable Malatsa, except myself, saying that you stood in the podium. You said you have written this to me and I've referred to a committee. But now, according to what now you are saying, I didn't say that what you have done, and I'm still on that point saying that no one mentioned your name, and
we are going to engage on that issue, feeling that, but everyone speaking, cherishing, no one should be invited to people. Like even myself, when I was in the bus, I was having listening to that, but somebody whom I can, when time comes, who I can declare here in this meeting of ECOMIT. You know that I was sick on Wednesday. It was not even easy to chair. And on Thursday I couldn't speak, Friday I couldn't speak, and I was having messages from the media office, but there's the one that she wrote an SMS saying that due to your letters, blah, 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 blah. I'll come to that, because this committee is not going to have such a gender ban in media. They must wait until the committee finalizes. So that one, she is in my phone, and the one that on this morning they were saying that I had called Mr. Jordan and Oliphant to come and present this committee. It was not said to. It was the media who pronounced this morning, and I didn't do anything like that. I can't do that because in the comments we were not agreeing, especially that you refer to page 10. We're still on that when today I arrived, I'm having another letter of you. We're not going to address that letter until we finish this minute. So whoever was thinking that setting agenda, today this meeting is a meeting of routine of the committee, that it has been there to the meetings until next week. No one has called anyone to come. That misleading information, it must not from us as a committee, as a chairperson, as the media was saying. They know those who are saying in the media this morning. I didn't invite any of Dan and Oliphant. I don't know inviting them for what. And I didn't call a meeting of today because of this FIFA scandal. No, no way. This is a decided meeting long ago. I must put that clear. So, Honorable, is Honorable Manana, Honorable Malika.
Thank you, Chairperson. After Chairperson, all matters arising, I must make it clear that this minute, I've mentioned last week that we are not accounting to the shadow minister whom they call Mr. Honorable Malati. He is a shadow minister of the PA for sport and recreation, not for the committee. That is why I've mentioned that, because I can read the minute, everything is kept. And I've mentioned that we are not accounting to the shadow minister of sport from the DA. So in short, I said we're not going to entertain the issue of the FIFA. The investigation is international. How can we just come with something and put it in the table? Then Honorable Malati bring the letter to the chairperson that we have to summon Honorable Dennis Jordan. He said he's going to wait for the investigation. After the investigation, we're going to bring that issue. If the disaster is also involved in that bribery. But so long as the international body is busy with this investigation, so how can you bring it in the table? I'm so surprised when I look at this minister that have been omitted. Of course, I said that we are not accounting to the shadow minister. We are not accounting to one of each other in this committee. Thank you.
It was a hot debate on that day. Really, because the minutes I've received it this morning, and Honorable Manan and Honorable Malazi reacted saying that Honorable Manana, she is out of order. Some of the minutes are not in here. So Honorable Malika, Honorable Bergman, Honorable Fultan.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, my take on this matter to begin with. I don't think finger pointing at this point in time will assist us as this committee. I think it is proper for us as this committee to begin to realize and accept that we are faced by a critical situation. We need to accept that first. Because it is true, Chairperson, as you have mentioned, that at this committee we cannot rely on the media and press briefings. But if we are not informed, if we are not allowed the situation whereby somebody is going to come and make a presentation and then so we can engage, we cannot be excluded from listening, from looking at the media and hearing what the media is saying. I think what we need to do and agree as this portfolio committee is to agree that, yes, the investigation is international, but as mostly affected and as the sports portfolio committee, we need explanation. Because if the minister is going to, after hearing anything, is going to go and call the media briefing and don't come and explain to us, the next week he does the same and does not come to explain to us, where are we getting the information? Because when we go to the media, he's not telling us. We don't know what has happened. It says that whoever has got the information should be brought and come and explain to us. Other than that, we are going to rely from the outside sources like media and everybody. And that, I think, will cause confusion because what is going to hear will be different from what I'll be hearing. So I would suggest that we face the reality and decide as this committee as that whoever has got information, because as I was listening at the media as well yesterday, I could say that now Mlife is complaining that he's being betrayed by Jordan, but who is telling us as the personal committee? So how long are we going to keep waiting as the personal committee when news, when things are happening day by day, every day? I think that is why I think we need to come together this portfolio committee and decide that those affected, those we think have got information in South Africa, must come and tell us one thing, because we don't want to get these stories in installments. Today there is a letter, there are emails. Somebody is going to say, oh, about this email is this. Tomorrow another letter, if somebody is confessing that I did this, there will be a media briefing. We need to know. So that when we wait from an informed a position, because when we, as we are waiting, that we are waiting, we don't know what we're waiting for, whether we paid, whether we, what did we pay, what was the reason we paid, why when we decided to pay that amount, it was not made known to the nation. We have got all those questions, but we cannot ask from the media as well. We need to ask those questions from here to the relevant people, and that is my case, Chairperson. On this matter, thank you.
I made a mistake. Honorable Malika, Honorable Fustan, you were not part of a committee last week. Any committee did take a decision which are seeing there. In future, you can't contribute in a minute that you were not present. It's an oversight. I'm seeing when I'm looking here, you were not present. And
no, point of order.
I don't think it's true that I cannot contribute. I'm interested. What I cannot say, I cannot confirm whether the minutes are correct or not. I've got a lot to contribute.
No. I didn't give you a platform. You must wait.
But it's
and
out of order to say
I can't be out of order.
We've been doing this purposely all the time.
Okay,
but because
no,
this matter would be
for... Which rule are you quoting? Which rule are you quoting?
I don't know that.
Which rule? No, which rule excludes us from discussing matters arising? Which rule?
Honorable Sultan, did I say you must take the platform? I'm still addressing you as a committee. In the committee, there's no way that when we are reading the minutes and wanting to confirm what, but if we are now on the discussion, but we are still in place, not on the minutes, in any committee, no one is contributing in the minutes that he was not there. But with the issue, Honorable Madiba, when you were discussing the issue, that is today we're having another letter, you have right because they are present in the meeting. It's a standard rule of the committees. When I'm saying correction, when I'm saying matters arising are for those people who were present. But if there's an issue, there's a letter today that you can contribute. There's no way that some vote was not part of the discussion on the matter arising that you must contribute. Once you are a member of the committee, you must be sitting in that meeting. If there's no point of order on that, the rule is that contribute in the meeting that you were present. So I'm saying on this time of matters raising, you were not in the committee. So, and I want to be respected when I'm chairing. No one must speak without me saying that he must. Like Mr. Bachman is waiting for his return, but I was saying that I've noticed in the minutes that I've signed the register that I was shown by the secretary that two members were not in the meeting. So I was going to tell Honorable Fidan that I've made a mistake of... No, Honorable Mabir and Honorable Mandar, whilst I'm speaking, you must not shake your hands, raise your hands. And if you want a committee to be chaotic, we'll allow that in a correct way and we can stop that. Because I'm still on the floor. I've seen what they're doing with Honorable Mandar. I'm still giving you the procedure of the committee. So I'm saying if you were not present in the meeting, you cannot debate on matters arising. But this matter now is, we have another letter from Honorable Malase, the Shadow Minister of the AIDS. It's written like that. There's no hidden agenda. This letter is the third letter that today we need to present, but we're still in the matters arising. Honorable Bachman.
Chair, just to be procedurally proper, can I request that this ruling be sent to rules, just so we can get a fair understanding that this ruling stands? I seem to remember and recall that you correct on the corrections, and a person who wasn't present cannot correct minutes, but they can raise an issue. But, so we're not to the future ruling, can we rather just send it to rules committee to get a definite clarification? Just in terms of what is being said here, I must tell you that we're definitely not accountable to the minister and all shadow minister, and the minister is actually accountable to us. And we definitely, I mean, I feel like a Muppet here, you know, this is like a Muppet show. We're not a puppet of the minister. We have to be able to do our job, and we mustn't do our job in fear or any fear of retribution. Now, when we had this issue with FIFA initially, this same committee wanted to call FIFA to the committee. So we must have double standards. Now, we were pretty proper in raising the fact that there's something happening, and it's another cloud of corruption that's hanging over our head, and we need to interrogate it. Now, exactly as my colleagues have said, it's time that we start questioning it now rather than hear information on the sidelines and get information through the media. This committee, if we really don't want to be the Muppet Show, must get the information first then. And there's a, you know, there's been a proposal in that letter that Mr. Jordan come in the council, now the new Honourable Mayor, come in account. But now possibly every day we get new information, now possibly we need to see...
My point of order is that we can't discuss media things here. Honorable Malaji wrote a letter. We deliberated in the last meeting. We took a decision. Honorable Malaji has written a letter. We are going to deliberate. Now, why must we end up discussing again things that are in the media? We will make a decision. We'll make a correct decision, and we'll call a person that is appropriate to come and ensure that the committee is taken on board. We didn't refuse that we'll call the people that are responsible to take the committee on board. We didn't refuse. Now, why are members continuing to want us not to be structured? Why are members continuing to want us to discuss things in the media? We are not going to get there. That is why I'm making a point of order.
Point of order,
please.
President, I'm still maintaining that you will be engaging in the today's letter. You were not there last
It's a matter of procedure, sir.
No, okay.
It's a matter of procedure.
Okay.
Parliament establishes and still maintains a practice of matters that we see in the media. Last year, I raised a matter that I had no further knowledge of. During the presentation. No, I'm giving you an example, sir. Please be patient with me. Please be patient with me.
No, I will.
Is that Mr. Ralefama is misleading this house deliberately. That's why I want to give you an example.
No, I don't.
My point of order is that Mr. Ralefama, on a procedural perspective, he is misleading us. I have got examples of issues that we discussed in the house. President responded.
This is a committee.
We can't go with this point of view.
I've not changed your point of order. Don't elaborate on your point of order. That's the ruling. Honourable Bergman was still on the floor.
Yes, thank you. Chair, didn't tell the Chief of making the point of order when Honourable Manana was talking, and it's the same issue that I'm rising on. I'm speaking in response to Honourable Manana. So, I'm not sure why the whip has decided to be silent then and then all of a sudden wake up now, but we need to be...
No.
Not wake up, but why
do
you need to come in now?
I'm
speaking about double standards, and now you're seeing a standard of double standards. Not that correct? Chair, I withdraw, but I'm just saying we must have the same standards. We must be consistent with ours, and in particular with our rulings. If we didn't discuss this under the letter, I'm willing to reserve my right to comment under the letter.
Yes. That's what I'm ruling on. I'm saying Honourable Malaza has spoken on page 9 to 10, and Honourable Malaza correctly saying that was said, let's have time frames, and we're saying that every Tuesday, because there are developments every day, and it's recorded, saying that every Tuesday we'll be talking about this. So I'm calling anyone out of order that is referring to a new discussion was not yet presenting, and I'm 100% sure that on that everyone who's present today is going to be engaged on the letter of the second or third letter of Honorable Malaza. But I cannot take intake of honorable members that they don't attend committee meetings when we're discussing issue that we've discussed whilst they were absent, giving them the chance to contribute. I'm still maintaining that you must contribute on the team that you were present and have a chance of saying that you are wrong, Mr. Malaza, you are wrong, Mr. Rarikhom, because in the committee we have said ABC. I'm not doubting about that. That those who were absent in the committee, they don't have any bite to take. I'm maintaining that. How can you go to another committee and when this committee is discussing the issues that they've discussed during your abstention, and then you are feeling that you have a right to discuss never on in any committee, and this is not a mockery of a committee. But I'm asking you, honorable members, don't lose other things when you are contributing, telling that we are not perfect. No one is a perfect of everyone on the government. We are all not perfect of the minister, the present minister, but we are doing oversight to Baluli as a minister. We are not perfect of himself, and we know 100% that we cannot be perfect. He's then an executive, and we are doing oversight on Honorable Mbalula, and we can't be perfect. And that word, I'm taking it very strongly. We're not perfect. If you feel like saying that, you are out of order. No member can be perfect of each member here. And now, because of this scarfer, as if we've gained something, you use those names. We cannot take it kind. We must discuss this issue of U.S. After 2011, now it's 2015, there comes this thing. We said last time, this is a brutal mark. Why did they keep this until now? And I was saying, let's wait and see. Because the other day, we hear that so-and-so has benefited that other day. But as we're sitting there today, I've said, we have another letter. That letter, which was written by Solima Lack, DA subdominions of sport and recreation. There's no reaction about that because Honorable Shirley wrote it to me and gave us this portfolio of himself in the DA. I don't think that even last week I didn't rule on that when he was saying Umanane is out of order because we were reading a letter signed by Honorable Shirley Malas, a DA subdominions of sport and recreation. In our community, you know, we don't have those portfolios. So if he feels like doing that, I didn't rule on that. So with the minutes, this is a good reflection of the minutes until number 10. We do agree, Honorable Malach, that we said every Tuesday, if this thing is still on, we discuss. And our going to come to that point becomes absentee in our community. And we don't feel happy that people, they don't prioritize this committee. And when we discuss issues, and then they come and want to disrupt, we never ever...
Sir, we're not disrupting. We're not disrupting, sir. We're not disrupting. No, we're not disrupting.
We are disrupting.
No.
When you are seeing media, you bring these things everything. Yes, you are out of order.
That is derogatory.
We don't recognize you because you were not in the committee last time. You love me too much.
There are people who keep on rambling here.
Yes.
Can you control them?
You like me too much.
There are people
who out of order, Honorable Sultan. Honorable Sultan, I'm saying for the third time, you are out of order. You are not part of the meeting. And we know why you are not part of the meeting. There are very few in your party that you can...
And we're going to grow.
I should throw me there. Honorable members, don't put heads in this thing. He's laughing. We are not playing, Honorable Sultan. Honorable Malaysia, Honorable Mushi.
Yeah, Chair, the issue about is the interaction amongst committee members that is also concerned. Because if I as an opposition MP doesn't feel protected, and two wrongs don't make a right, Chair, I want to emphasize that point. But there is an intuitive way to react somehow when people feel they are not being protected. And that is, I'm not condoning it, but I'm saying let when the speaker is on the mic, that they are protected. And I'm not sure you saw, there was an incident there that could have gone wrong either way, you know. Fellow members of the committee can't serve another member's mic when they are speaking. I think those interventions are for you, Chair. And I think, you know, we shouldn't, when topics are difficult, it doesn't mean that we should lose the decorum of the way we engage on issues, you know. The reality is difficult issues will always be there, and we can choose how to engage them. I don't want to sneeze, but Honorable Manana switched off Honorable Dandani's microphone as he was speaking.
We don't do that in our moment. Apologize to Honorable Sultan.
Honorable Sultan,
I'm begging you. You always behave, Anadada, please. I must share the meeting, please. Honorable Sultan, this is not the first time that you are doing this in the committee. Can you respect your chairperson? Because you just switch the mic and speak without me recognizing you. Why are you doing this?
Can I apologize for that, Chair, formally? And I promise you, I won't do it again.
Please.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Malaz. I didn't say that because I was wondering why somebody is still on the floor. I was still rounding up. Honorable Fundan, chip in and press the mic. So it's wrong. Point taken. Honorable Mushi.
No, thank you very much. I just did not, I have not seen this committee for a long time, you know, behaving like this. But Chairperson, it is very much clear of why the media is here. It is even again clear
as to who actually invited the media here. But I think that person, whatever the media is here for, it's something that we tried to explain, that we had a debate on last week. We have said to the opposition that, look, opposition, we cannot call Mr. Jordan here. Why? Because the matter is under investigation. And the opposition stood up and said, but this is South Africa and that thing is happening in America. And we again said, South Africa is a member of the international body, does not operate in isolation. And I think we understood each other. And I'm just surprised, Chairperson, that I'm seeing it, you know, happening and resurfacing again. But in actual fact, I thought that we agreed on that. I'm looking at the minute. It is minuted. It is saying that until the U.S. investigation has been completed, it is saying on page 10 that that motion, Mr. Jordan, could be, and it says could be introduced, meaning the day. And if we decide that we do not introduce it, by this person, we must indicate it. The committee is very much aware of the procedure of this portfolio committee, that the person who accounts to us is the minister. That we actually allow the debate to go on about Jordan. Should have not happened. We actually should be calling the minister, because the minister is the person who accounts to us, the person. I think we are in order if we put the person by calling the minister. And I think this is the input, this is the contribution that I want to make. Chairperson, I don't want to be seen on television like I've seen people doing today. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, enough the motion. Can you adopt the minutes? Honorable Malachi?
This is unlegitimate, but Honorable Manana is going on and on about something. Can you please?
Honorable Manana, you know, Honorable Member, when the presiding are sitting there, we'll be hearing them saying that, I can't see other things in here. I don't know what now Honorable Manana was saying. And I've stopped Honorable Manana not to do anything. And I'm seeing that this debate is, there's no one must please. This is about the country. And this is about this committee to take the informed decisions. So I don't know what she has said to Honorable Manana that...
Sir, I love Honorable Manana. I'm not going to repeat it, but can...
Honorable Manana,
see, this is the procedure you're talking about.
Please. You know, fish of... Honorable Bachman, Honorable Manana, when we're not having this hot debate, we're always doing this. I'm appealing, Honorable Manana, this is an issue that no one must play. So I'm suspecting that child you love, Manana, and she must not react, because you used to do those things, three of you, and I'm appreciating that you are young ones in this committee. But today, we are discussing serious issues. Please, Honorable Manana, whatever you said, and stop it. I'm saying for the second time, stop it. There is this old man. Hey, this one. This old man can be naughty that old as you are. I was saying that you are protected, Honorable Manana, by harassed by Honorable Manana. He said, what's racial today? The woman is harassing the man. We cannot take it because you are gender activists. I'm putting the minutes in front of you. Anyone must propose the adoption. That's where this question of minutes we are coming to. No one can propose and second the minute was he or she was not in, and she was not in even for discussion. So when sometimes you are happy, we want to flaws, and I won't allow that. At least I know what must we do. Anyone proposing the adoption of the minutes? Honorable
Chairperson, I propose for the adoption of the minutes as a member of the committee who was part of the committee who does not stop anything that did not defend each person.
What?
who's supporting the minute, Honorable Blackman supported the minute. The Honorable Blackman was part of the committee, and he has a right to support the minute. That's why last week we have said we cannot support those other minutes, because there was an issue between Honorable Malad and Honorable Radhom, and Honorable Bergman behaved because I said, no, we cannot. And he said, why are we doing this? I said, we are doing it because it's not a true reflection of minutes, these two honorable members. But let's take it like that, honorable members. Thank you so much. Honorable Sunay is reminding me of the 20 May minutes, which are not with us. We didn't adopt because of this problem. So can we adopt the minutes of 20th of May? We didn't because there was this problem of recording. Any move up from those minutes, honorable Master?
Chair, as one of the people who had made input that would help the adoption of those minutes, I'll move for adoption.
Any stakeholder? Honorable Manan, the top of someone.
I second the minutes for the
20th. Honorable member. Honorable members, according to the agenda, it's an announcement. It's 4.2 program for oversight visits during the period 21 July and 23 September. I've asked that website as Menco on last week Wednesday. We look at this, but we heard that there's a proposed, I don't know other members from other parties, that there is a proposal of clusters that they must go out in this parliament or the cluster committees. So this morning I've asked that they must not circulate the work that was done on Wednesday as a MENCO, because it's going to affect our program of doing the oversight during the research until Usune is getting an official date from the House Chairperson of Parliament that the clusters must go away on the week of some days and dates. So I'm proposing that we must not engage with our oversight, because it's going to be affected. The work that we have done on Wednesday is going to be affected by what is proposed by Parliament. Chairpersons are asked to look at the oversight days to accommodate these days that the Parliament, you know, most there is a taking Parliament in the NCOP. We used to call, when we're doing the oversight as National Parliament, as last as we call People's Parliament, isn't it? Yes. So I'm suspecting they are reviving that program. They've just tell us chairpersons that there's nothing. So the proposed program that we've finalized, as we're asked by the committee for the week of our constituents, who are helping it until this week, we get fully fledged information from the House Chairperson. Honorable members, I'm submitting that. Taking order.
No, Chair, I think it's in order, because we still have got the possibility of the next meeting. Yeah. So that if we must resubmit after you have verified the thing, then we'll submit the program, because the program is for the 21st of July. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable members. Announcement, point number 5, according to agenda, the attendance of Shrine Guard Games. Honorable members,
says that you still remember when Ushashko was here. They were saying that it's going to be a summit. And we've said we've got a big interest in this committee because we have issues with Salka as a committee. So it's not games, it's summit. We've briefed by Ushashko. Let's listen the days and the dates in order that few of us, if it's few, they must attend on behalf of Komen, because we want to go and contribute in that summit of Salka. Is it in order? Okay. Thank you, honorable members. 5.2, 2012 Common World Evaluation Committee visit.
When Sashkok was here, Mr. Sam referred to a few visits by an evaluation committee to Durban, and he asked also if members of this committee could at all make it, that they just come and attend or just pop in there just to show their support for the bid. I have requested dates of these visits, and I'm still awaiting so that members who will see their way clear or are able to can see whether they can actually just visit to show support, but I've not received the dates back yet.
Thanks, sir. On this particular issue, I'd like us to have more information about whether a person there is, you know, as part of observing the work that is being done or what the engagements that, you know, SASCO will be having with the teams that will be listing, mindful of the fact that we've often complained about not having sufficient resources to do our oversight, more so in provinces, and that on the basis of this, how do we balance the more pressing need with where we can make a meaningful impact? Are we just going to be part of a delegation of observers? Should we be either sending either the chairperson there so that we have cost and then the committee be able to do and go to areas we haven't been before, mindful of the fact that our budget is really minuscule?
Honorable Marathi, that's what we've discussed, say that in some of these things we need to be present. Now we are faced with some problems on the community on the 2010. We need not to be part of these people who are taking decisions because we are doing the oversight. Correctly so, as you are saying, we are saying maybe not the whole community, a delegation maybe of key members. We must constantly be part of what is going for our committee. I'm suspecting that we are supporting that. But due to equation, some members, three or two, must attend. I do agree on that. Honorable member, now this is, you want to say something?
Well, at the beginning of the meeting, I raised my hand. And incorrectly from a procedural perspective, you said that we have got a program for the date. You mentioned swimming South Africa in particular. You promised that you'd give me an opportunity, you know, where later. So I don't know if
that's an opportunity.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I think I've been assisted by the fact that I had no right to participate in the discussion of the matters arising. And so...
We're close. Say what you wanted to say in the morning. Agreed on that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I start off by acknowledging that, you know, because that's where now where my opportunity comes in. And I just hope that you'll have members will have the patience to when I make my plea to the committee. That as a committee, I think we'll be acting responsibly if we do give ourselves space to engage on this before. Unless, you know, bribery against our country in the context of the fact that.
Point of order, we're going to get to that just now. It's on the agenda. Yes. The next thing, according to agenda, is a letter from Honorable Malazi.
Okay. You will enjoy me, okay?
Yes. Honorable Madam, don't speak while another member is speaking. I don't know what's wrong with you. Give me a chance to say. Please, leave Honorable Fultan, or else you must not sit next to Honorable Fultan. Please. Honorable members, today, an electronic message to our secretary Usune requests that you urgently confirm whether or not Danny Johnson will be summoned before the committee. Honorable Chairperson, I'm receiving today this letter. And those who were thinking that I did get it long ago, I didn't. And those who were harassing me during the weekend, I didn't see the letter because I was off sick. Sometimes you don't know what is going on in Parliament. You just receive letters before I do receive and react. Please, honorable media, you must not do that. Because this is the first day, not all of you who harassed me during the weekend, I couldn't speak, I was sick, couldn't speak. So the harassment that you did give, I'm suspecting some chairperson will need protection from you. But I'm saying not all of you. Those who did that, I've taken this exception. Everyone who was answering my phone, I didn't answer for even for political things because I couldn't speak. I left this parliament because my throat and my test was blocked. So, and I don't respond on something that I didn't see. This is a day which is a day of COVID that we are not scheduled for this letter. I must clarify, this is a day of schedule long ago of COVID. The letter is saying from Honorable Malaza, is saying following the release of a further letter authorizing the 10 million payment of to Concave, this time from Danny Jordan, a parliamentary briefing on the bribery allegation can no longer be delayed. I request an urgent commitment to summon Dr. Danny Jordan and any other individuals implicated before the committee. Jordan, Mulife, Oliphant and other key officials need to present their case to the South African people on the allegation of corruption. That's threatening to blemish the 2010 World Cup, which all of us regard as a beacon of national pride. We do not want to see details of alleged from international organizational and individuals, bit by bit. The quickest way for our South African officials to clear their names or clarify is for a parliamentary briefing to urgently take place. South Africans deserve to hear the truth from the mouths of our own officials. It is high time that the individuals come forward with the critical information which will enable us to get to the bottom of the issue. Almost every day since this scandal broke, new pieces of information come to light. Therefore, an inquiry established as an act of Parliament must also summon all members of the BID committee and any government officials who were intimately involved in a BID process for the 20 World Cup. Thank you and kind regards. Solly Malazi, Shadow Minister of Sports and Recreation, Democratic Alliance, and the phones are here. This letter is read as with a petition, and we do have a petition committee. I need that we must be engaged. In this parliament, we do have a petition committee who is taking petitions. I must be corrected. I was not aware of the detail of the letter, but let's engage the letter. What does that mean, the letter to a committee? Thank you so much. Please wait, that's your letter.
Okay, I'm just going to go straight to the letter that like we discussed in the last meeting, and to just re-emphasize again, we did say as soon as the time is right, we'll call those that are responsible. Now, to go straight to the letter, vis-à-vis that we are a committee, which the letter talks about.
Maybe before that, it has just a moment. To have a committee on Tuesday, I'm given another letter from SAFA, one of the members, by my secretary. Can I read this letter?
Yes.
Compare with this? Yeah. The letter is saying all SAFA members, all SAFA NEC members, is from Chief Executive Officer. Update on SAFA's response to bribery claims related to the hosting of the 2010 FIFA World Cup on African soil. No, she was asking whether can I read, but I'm asking how did it land to her. She said this office emailed to her, anything emailed to her, I'm responsible of it and the committee. Can I read, you give me a relation, because this is the first time that I'm seeing it, and I'm suspecting that any way will assist our discussion. In order, honorable members, honorable members.
Yes, it's in order. If you could also just get a copy, if there's one.
No, suppose you should be able to reproduce even my shirt, she's with me now, and I was saying that this is the information that I must share with the committee. So I'm not trying to read it.
Yeah.
This memorandum is in response to requests for clarity from many SAFA members to the announcement of the U.S. Attorney General on Wednesday, 27 May 2015, regarding claims of bribery in relation to the hosting of 2010 FIFA World Cup in South Africa. The association is alarmed by the narrative that has developed around its strong support for the South African government's inclusion of the African diaspora in the World Cup Legacy Project, specifically in the Caribbean. SAFA joined the South African government in fulfillment of this promise to support the diaspora. We are concerned that the new narrative clearly, one, casts the country's inclusion of the African diaspora as moral wrong, sinister and therefore criminal in nature, two, insinuations that leaders in the then local organized community and the government conspired to bribe their way to hosting the 2010 FIFA World Cup in South Africa. Three, implies that none of the programs of the 2010 FIFA World Cup were reported and therefore leaders are trying to cover up their misdeeds by bringing attention to these programs only now, more than 5 years after the World Cup. SAFA rejects with contempt the attempts to tarnish the image of the country by insinuations that, one, support for the African diaspora program was wrong, two, that the African diaspora program was not approved project, three, that the USD 10 million for the African diaspora was a bribe in exchange for a vote, four, that somehow there was something sinister with the way we won the hosting rights to 2010 FIFA World Cup. On Wednesday, the 10th of June 2015, South African Minister of Sport and Recreation, Mr. Fikile Mbalula, brought the world's attention to the words of former President Thabo Mbeki, who said the following: the basis of South Africa's bid was a resolve to ensure that the 21st century unfolds a century of growth and development in Africa. Again, Courtney, this is not a dream. It is a practical policy. The successful hosting of the FIFA World Cup in Africa will provide a powerful, irresistible moment to the African nations. I'm sorry, honorable members. We want on behalf of our continent to stage an event that will send the ripples of confidence
from the Cape to Cairo, an event that will create social and economic opportunities throughout Africa. When to ensure that one day historians will reflect upon the 2010 World Cup as a moment when Africa stood tall and resolved to turning the tide on the theory of forward and conflict. Want to show that Africa's time is come. We are also reminded by Minister Malo that the African Union views the African diaspora as one of its future regions, the other five being on the African continent. It should therefore come as no surprise that the African diaspora was included in the benefits of the first FIFA World Cup held on African soil. The leadership of the BID traveled the world to remind all audiences that the 2010 FIFA World Cup had to benefit the entire African continent in one way or another. To top these travels, our world icon, the late former state president, Mr. Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela, made one of his last foreign trips on 29 April 2004 and visited Trinidad and Tobago to encourage the head of East Football Association to vote for South Africa to host the 2010 FIFA World Cup. He undertook this 17-hour trip because of... There you are, Honorable Sultan. When you are whispering, you must whisper very soft. That must not hear you. You are allowed to whisper, but not loudly. The leadership of...
help you, because I'm worried about your throat and I'm missing certain things from what you're saying, not because of the kind of interruptions, but is it possible that you maybe just get a copy before, maybe just shoot up quickly to the photosetting machine around the corner or something, just so we can actually get ourselves and rest your voice?
Okay, I can do that. We'll wait patiently because we have an interest. Maybe reproduce copies for the members immediately. Let's have a 5 minutes break.
Someone is saying Thank you. Thank you. Honorable members, me the houses work back again. We were still sorting the in-house things, so I don't think you have a problem on that. I was in page 'Cause it's short. Honorable members, as a committee, we're just honestly keen. This is the first time that we're seeing this letter. Those have a part of it briefing. They are murmuring that they know the letter. There's nothing that we can hide. Let's continue reading the letter. And this letter will discuss the content of the letter and the letter of Honorable Malaj. That's why we want that we must read it. Because Usune is saying that they emailed her on Sunday and Monday we're not in the offices, but there's something that we are going to correct. What do we do if we got some emails during weekends? can I give members 5 minutes to read it? Because I'm having this problem of the voice.
Sorry, I'm just worried about time. It's already coming to one. Is it possible that you can...
I wanted to hear from the members that chair we are ready. He does a meeting. I'm waiting for that. You want us to start? Honorable members, let's engage with the letter from Honorable Malari. I'm sure if you want to do reference on the in the letter from Chief Executive Officer Mr. Dennis, you can also let me take hands on the members, Honorable Manan, Honorable Malaj, Honorable Bahmet, Honorable Moshe, Honorable Mamusom, Honorable Vidal, the Whip. Honorable Manan.
Thank you, Jefferson. I'll refer to the letter of Honorable Malaki, although it's a principle of subjudice. So, Jefferson, this document, I can just mention one thing, it's a very short one. Jerome Falke, the SG of FIFA, also said he has not dealt on this matter. And Minister said, these three trenches were made, it was for the development, the contribution for the football development. And since this letter of Honorable Malati is asking, is requesting the committee to summon the Honorable Judge Dennis Wadan, I will plead, Jefferson, that these entities, including the SRSA, we have the Minister of Sport in South Africa, whom we can just request him, or we can, I can use even the name since he's using summoned here. We can request or summon the Minister to come before the committee, before we can go further, so that we can even get the information, because Mr. Malak is liaising with the media, and we need the Honorable Minister to come before us, as per your request. Thank you.
First of all, just on the media side of things, a lot of our job is based on receiving something in the media. So if you see something in the media, it would be very... I'd say if this is correct to come and fire raise it just so that we could try and resolve or try and assist in trying to sort that out. The problem with what's happening now is that our minister seems to be calling all the press conferences and we haven't been briefed. So every time you see a press conference and he's quick out of the blocks and makes his own detriment because he's not actually the person that was involved come in 2010. But shall we have these press conferences and then staff is coming to the press conference, then they're not coming to the conference. And we're sitting with contradictions, and, you know, it's press conference upon press conference, contradiction upon contradiction. And it all begins to look a bit like this comedy hour that I spoke about. You know, what we need to understand here is that we're not investigating anything at this stage. At this stage, we merely, as the committee, want to be briefed. If everyone else is being briefed, I'm sure we as a committee have the right to be briefed as to what was going on, what was the intentions, where were we, what were the payments. At first there wasn't a payment, then there was a payment, then it was for this, but then it was for this, then there wasn't a letter, but there is a letter. And the parties involved, it's important that we hear from the parties involved for our own peace of mind, what really took place and why it took place and what the intention was from their side. We're not asking for an investigation, we're not asking for any commission. I mean, I must tell you that there was a commission of inquiry that was going to be set up to investigate what FIFA had told us to investigate. And, you know, it's being explained why that never saw the light of day. What we're looking for here is a briefing. And it's not proper to get a briefing from the minister at this stage. The minister, yes, he's the one that accounts to us. But if you hear the press conferences and that, it seems that the minister doesn't have a handle on what's going on himself either. So we need to be sure that we call the people that are there and the people that are relevant to what could be potentially investigated or embarrassing to South Africa. So again, I reiterate that we do have the power to call SAFA, and we give the power to call members from SAHPRA, and we should use those powers to try and get an understanding of what took place in terms of the briefing, and not necessarily at this stage of the investigation.
Thanks, Chair. I think at the outset it's very important to lay to the table that there is no predetermined judgment on the individuals that were involved. You know, Parliament is, the Portfolio Committee is a platform for its members to hold any entities, be it the political authority of the department and its entities accountable. And SAHPRA happens to be one of the entities that are accountable to the Portfolio Committee, given the mandate of our responsibilities as members of this committee. But it's also key to, for the committee, for those people that were there from the outset of the decision-making that culminated in the hosting of the World Cup, which, without any doubt, was a successful event, that they provide answers to us based on what is now a very rolling issue that is leading towards becoming an embarrassing one. So that even we can rest assured that from those entities we are supposed to hold accountable, they have engaged with us. And I don't think the right route would be to go to the political leadership at this stage. The political leadership, we have regular engagements with them. In fact, if they also valued the Portfolio Committee prior to the public announcement, they would have taken the Portfolio Committee into confidence, which hasn't happened. And I don't think it is the right approach to reduce it to personalities. This is simply to engage from the horse's mouth those that were there when decisions are made, so that we can begin to understand what were the factors that drove those decisions that resulted in the revelations that we now face. And the content of this letter, the majority, if not all of it, the wording, is something that SAHPRA has previously made public communication over this. But the latest developments are central to this issue. And I believe that for the committee to adopt a rolling wait-and-see approach will be reduced to spectators when we can be intervening in providing the platform for people to provide the space. They are now involved in a very dirty public point scoring, and they haven't had a public platform to take South Africa into confidence. And Parliament is such one structure that's available to us as members of this portfolio committee to open it for those individuals to provide us with the answer as we begin to gather all the facts that are related to this issue. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, your voice is really leading you. Well, first, Chair, I must go on record as having expressed my sincere appreciation of the fact that you opened up with this letter from SAHPRA, and I've taken time to read through it, although I didn't finish it, but it reveals quite a bit of information. Some of the questions that one had are being answered here. Hence, it is critically important that we do have an engagement, you know, with the then members of the LOC. You know, the idea here, like my colleagues, you know, from the DF said, you know, the idea is not to conduct an investigation. I don't want any member of the committee or an MP even outside of this committee to have a fear that we are conducting a parliamentary investigation. There are processes that lead you to that. All we want is to have the commission at our disposal. Let the minister, let Honorable Ed Yordan have confidence in the committee that let me go there and state my case so that people can put questions to me, and then they be satisfied that this was done with the correct intentions, and we are all South Africans. If there's need to, you know, who knows, we would find ourselves saying, hey, don't attack South Africa unfairly. Maybe there is no case here, but at this point in time, we are in the dark. I just want to remind the committee of the words of our own minister, you know, Honorable Mbalula, when he dismissed the argument in the budget vote of the EFF. He said, don't come here and something to that effect, I'm paraphrasing, don't come here and base your debate on newspaper, you know, clip. And that was a noteworthy statement. Now, we don't want to find ourselves as this committee going on and basing our perceptions on newspaper and other media, you know, when presentations. We want to base our judgment on that. We have questions that we need answers for, and that can best be done in a forum of this nature. We are the last hope of the country in this matter, barring, you know, the course of all, and we're hoping that this matter will not find itself, you know, in the course of, you know, of this country. And that's why we are insisting that let Mr. Denny Yordan, Oliphant, and others come, even with the minister. They are used to coming here, you know, on their own, even without the minister. If minister can make himself available, so much would be appreciated, you know, of that step. But let's have this engagement with them. It's crucial before matters really get out of hand. The name of the South African government and the people of South Africa, you know, is at stake, and we're citizens and we're proud of our country, and we want to make sure that we offer protection, you know, where when we are caught in an opportunity. That is the spirit to which we want these stakeholders to come to us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Sitan, Honourable Moshi, and after that, Honourable.
No, thank you, Sir President. You know, one of the reasons why we said we could not call Delito Dan last week was that every day there is a new information that is brought to light. And as we were speaking last week, we had only Delito Dan that the media spoke about. But as this week unfolds, Mulisi Oliphant came in. Now, we are saying something is going to come up again as this week unfolds. And we don't want to, you know, to get things in bits and pieces. That's one reason that we could not call Mr. Denny Jordan. But the other thing that we indicated, Chairperson, was that there is one member of SAFA or the organizing committee who is indicted. And that is very key. There's one person who is indicted. And once a person is indicted, then there is an element of subjudice, there is an element of subjudice. I don't know of this parliament. I've seen it happen several times that when something is under investigation, it's subjudice. And therefore, the parliament cannot get into it as one arm with respect to the other arm. Now, I'm saying, Mr. President, that I want to support the idea that says, call the minister who is not implicated, who just comes here. If you call Denny Jordan, who can here, Denny Jordan might be the person who is indicted, or Mulisipolivan might be the one who is indicted. Now, the minister is not. Now, let us call the minister and get all the facts and all the answers that we want. And I'm saying, Mr. President, that I'm standing here and I'm saying we are not going to call any
Thank you, Chair. I also, you know, support the idea of not calling Jordan at the moment. As I said last time, when the matter of calling Mr. Jordan was that people have been arrested on this matter. So that it appears already it is a matter sub judice. And therefore, you know, he cannot come here and be us and then later on be quoted by saying even in this sub, this is what he said. He may not even agree. Let's say he does agree, but that is what he understands. Again, the minister of Mbalula is responsible for this portfolio committee. I think it would only be very, very to not call somebody in FIFA without having called him. Since he has appeared in the media and briefed us about this, it would be much better that we hear from him and even better from him whether we need to call this thing or not. But I think at the moment, the matter of calling Jordan, when the matter is already shut, people have been arrested on this matter again. Thank you. I really don't think that it is possible.
Honourable, we are going to take the second round. Honourable, in the second, Honourable Bergman, Honourable Mulati.
No, sir. You see, who constitutes the LOC? The LOC is not constituted by SAFA. All the time, bids are led by government. So in this case, the LOC is the one, even the bidding committee was responsible for that, and all the time they will be led by government. So I don't understand why must we create a situation as if in South Africa
an African country that is developing is a banana republic. It's not a banana republic. There is a minister that is responsible for sport. That is the first thing that we need to understand. Secondly, as the portfolio committee, we've got the right to call whoever, including SAFA, including whoever, we can call them. Like we have made that example in previous meetings. But on the matter like this one, where even international protocol was not followed when it comes to how South Africa was treated, even the minister, how we were treated on this instance, the South African government, how it was treated. It is correct that we should call the minister and raise through the letter that will be going to the minister, raise the issues again that we are dealing with. And the minister will come and honor us calling him, and he might even, possibly we don't know, he might even end up saying no. SAFA, someone from SAFA can even accompany him. But at the moment, our view is that we need to call the minister, and then we'll take it from there. Like in the last meeting, we did indicate that this matter is changing every day. We need to see what happens. So at the moment, let's call the minister. The minister will come and brief us. If they are not satisfied as a committee, then we'll take it from there. But at the moment, the correct thing to do, because the bid, normally, there can't be a bid without support from government. So let's call the minister, because the current minister is the successor in kind for whoever that was there as the minister of sport there. So at the moment, the minister Mbalula is the successor, is responsible, because in terms of the law, you might not have been there then, but because somebody else was responsible for that, you become responsible. And that is why the minister will run around. He's not running around. It is because the South African government is under attack. It's under attack because we are an independent country. We've got the right as well to have had the opportunity to host. Having hosted, I mean, we've got views standing here. We've got views as different political parties. We've got views. But at the moment, because we are not investigating, let's get the facts. And let's get the facts from a correct source. And once we are not hate about getting the facts from correct source, then we can go and try to... But let's move from the base, the correct base of a person that is responsible for sport in South Africa. Because this is a matter that is international. And South Africa, as a sovereign country, state, must be respected. So that we can begin understanding what are the other issues that the South African government has taken in terms of protocol, in terms of even approaching the international bodies, in terms of ensuring that. That's it. We need to be privy to who are the people that are in Tigray, in Tigray. We don't know. We don't know all of those things. So for now, Chairperson, the correct thing to do is to call the minister, because the minister is responsible for sport in South Africa.
Honourable, after you, is honourable, and I'll have a state to take after you, honourable.
Yeah, I'm a bit uncomfortable about how the narrative is going. You know, I think that the nation wants to hear from the minister, and the minister is communicating. Where we have a problem is that we're not sure where we're drawing our briefs from. To just call the minister here, as Luke is saying, is to hold the minister accountable. Now, let's take the wild example of Marikana. Let's say that there was an investigation, and they found that the Minister of Police was the person responsible.
No point of order.
No point of order.
We are thinking that point of blame here. This is not a blame. This is a committee. We're not talking about these things that are happening in the
We've just got to be careful here, like we already see motions being brought into the meeting and we're not really debating around logic. And what we've got to look at is that we're in a situation now where we had people that were responsible for what was taking place. Yes, you can hold the minister to account if you want to, that's your decision. However, this committee is best placed to hear it from the sources that were responsible during the time of the World Cup and when the trial was alleged to have taken place.
Thanks, Chef. I just want to make three points. One, which is based on a previous case of how we dealt with this and it relates to our approach on this. At the very beginning of this portfolio committee, we addressed the issue of match fixing in relation to one of our games ahead of the World Cup. And we correctly traffic in here, and they expressed their frustration. They expressed their frustration about the lack of progress. The minister came here, explained to the committee about what had happened, even went overseas and came back and briefed us back on the basis of the interaction with the committee. And secondly, is the issue of sub judice. We probably have different interpretations of what it does, but there is no current Rafkan law enforcement authority that's doing any investigation into the likelihood or involvement of any South African in this. That to infer to sub judice as an obstacle to this is obfuscation. It's not dealing with the issue that's being brought to the table. And quickly on other strong objections on the issue of calling the minister here, for a simple reason that the minister has articulated his position on this, which is a matter of public record in the documentation of presented before us here. But the key thing remains that there were individuals who were there at the very onset of the bidding for the World Cup for South Africa that are still involved in football in one shape or another, who we can call to. And the issue that simply because bids were dreamed up by government also is not legit, because how bids were first submitted a bid to government, get government approval and funding, and then proceeded. That was a federation-driven bid with support from government, that government then takes over and provides substantial support. Then to say that, you know, we can't call them because government has been the lead agency on this, is to further muddy the water here. The bottom line is there are leaders involved in football who are involved in this in the preparations for the World Cup, who have not been given a platform to share and take South Africans into confidence about the events that led to the nature of their interactions and any other transactions that occurred up to now. To simply go to the minister, quite frankly, would be a delaying approach instead of dealing with the real authority in this case. And many a time...
The old member must behave. I've said to all of you, you must give anyone a chance. I'll give you, just leave this point of orders. Sometimes they are very intimidating. Listen, and if you differ with a member, you must raise hands in the second round. I'm clear about that. Just leave point of orders. I've said everyone must have a chance to say whatever she or he wants. Let's be patient. Protect the honourable member.
Thanks, sir. My final point is that there were individuals on the structure of the lead committee and the local organising committee who are both still alive, who are both still available, who are the people that can shape the lives that the community or some members of the community require into us, full understanding the sense of events that led to the transactions that took place. Therefore, for us not to opt for them and opt for the political authority,
in my view, would not be taking the right approach. The right approach is there are those individuals that were the higher echelons of those structures in the form of the Beef Commission, the local organizing committee, who have not made any input on this. And what we see is constantly public wars about the different versions of what happened. And the portfolio committee is situated rightfully in the space of calling them. And we must just decide that we our decisions are based on the substance of the issue rather than other factors that could contribute. That we are dealing with an issue here that requires the portfolio committee to decisively play a role. And decidedly doing so, we'll be having that interaction with members of the Beef Committee and the local organizing committee. Thank you, sir.
I've asked to you, members, that I will take a round of the Honorable Malaj. I'm sure Honorable Sultan, Honorable Manan, Honorable Moshi, Honorable the Whip. My gate, I'm speaking here as a chairperson, correctly so, we once had a problem of the match fixing. It was this committee, whilst I was sharing it, that we called our minister first and foremost, and our minister gave us a report. We have said, minister, we've put your side of store, and it was this committee saying that let's call Denis Jordan to come and give his side of story. We are not afraid of that. We are not puppets of anyone. Because the minister did brief us. This portfolio committee has got a head of the ministry, which is the minister. And firstly, we must hear from the minister. And we can't just think that all is well after we've heard the minister. We've done that to fix meeting. Because it was up and down in the media every now and then. No, we can't even, we were doing oversight and we can't even respond in the committees which are sending us here. Minister, come and tell us. We arrived at this committee that this match fixing has been out there. Tell us what is the story. We know all of us what he did tell us. Some of the people that today abroad are involved in so many things. He mentioned them that here there are people like ABC. And then we said, president of FIFA, come and tell us. After he told us, we said, no, we did get the information from minister. So now things are balancing. As I'm sitting here, I'm proposing as a member of committee, let alone being a chairperson, that let's call Minister Mbalula. Minister Mbalula didn't come and brief the committee. He briefed everybody in this country, not the committee. When we issued a statement, we said we've had a minister in the briefing. It was here in Parliament. Last week it was in Johannesburg. But as a committee, we don't have a briefing. And we must not treat as people who are not part of this committee. We need this statement that we are receiving today. Seemingly it was a statement that was issued up before that briefing in Johannesburg. The minister is heading a portfolio committee. The minister must come and brief us. And then we'll be taking from there. And I'm concur with those things that the minister must come and brief us. Honorable Sultani, Honorable Manan, Honorable Moshi, Honorable Bergman, and Honorable Malaz again. Because you are homeboys from Gauteng.
Thank you very much, Chair, particularly on your last statement. What is critical here is for us to know what happened before the current minister ascended to the position in which it is. This is why it is critically important that we have a member of the then LOC. That's the point I wanted to stress. It's not as if we're starting and ending with the current, you know, government, which is headed, by the Honorable, Honorable Minister Mbalula. That's why we need them. Especially that they've taken the initiative to write us this letter. It makes it all the more necessary for us to have them as well. I am not against the idea of having the minister. I would never be, because that would be unconstitutional. It's a matter of procedure, we need to have him. But let him come together with a member of the AOC who were present when these actions were taken, you know, because in a way the evidence is will be, to a large extent, here's the evidence. I hear that this and that happened, and so on. But if we've got a member of the LOC who was there, you know, then that will make it easier for us to come to some reasonable conclusion. This matter, I rest my case.
Thank you, Honourable President. Honourable Manana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, in Honourable Malak's letter, the previous letter, he has mentioned that the senior government official transferred the funds. So that's why I object that you must call Honourable Jenny, because he is the one who said the senior government official transferred the funds. That is why I say we have to call the Minister Malula. Chairperson, let me just reveal this. While I was sitting there with the Honourable Sikane, I was telling him that there must be something. Maybe there is hidden agenda, because I was telling him that you are behind that Nelson Mandela matter, where the Honourable Denis Jordani is there. So that's why they insist that we call Denis Jordani to come and account here, because I know their agenda, they want that municipality. And we cannot keep on sitting here. Now 2 o'clock we have... No, I'm not angry, Chairperson, because I talk.
You are out of order, and Honourable Sultana is not in. I've said that from this year's 2010 until 2015, there is a postal agenda, wherever. But you cannot say that another member, which he did say that, if there is a political agenda, let's keep it in our chest as politicians and deal with accordingly political. We are in a committee meeting, okay, finish, but leave the out of order issue that you have raised.
So in short, Chairperson, I'll just simply say I object to that request of someone in Kenny Jordan. Because of his letter, he mentioned that the senior officials transfer the funds. That's why I object, and we have to call the minister. Thank you.
Honourable members, we are taking second and third round. You must a little bit calm down day by day, because this thing is affecting South Africans, and we need to handle politically, but as a committee. So I know that sometimes politics emerges in the committee, but here we are here to look at the laws of the country. We must not forget about that. Honourable Mushi, Honourable Rarihoma, yes, we are
coming. Thank you, Chairperson. So I just quickly want to clarify myself. I'm the one who actually mentioned the subjudicate issue. And Honourable Roma as well. But I think this is a straightforward thing. South Africa is not an island. We have said that. South Africa is a member of the international body. South Africa is a member of Interpol. We have said that. South Africa is a member of the International Court of Justice. South Africa does not have even, you know, to be negotiated with. Once you become a member of these bodies, you comply. And I'm saying, Chairperson, this thing started with in America, the investigation. And we have seen people getting arrested in Zurich. A member of these bodies that I've just indicated. And I do not understand, Chairperson. We have, for all these years, been respecting the subjudicate issue. This parliament has been doing that. I don't know why all of a sudden we want to break that. I don't know. You tell me, Chairperson. But Chairperson, I want to reiterate, and I'm sorry, I'm not going to be part of a group that is going to agree that Denis Jordan and Wilfie Oliphant be summoned to this committee. I thank you, Chairperson.
No, Chair, we are not going to agree with the narrative that want to reduce South African government to corruption. We are not going to agree to that. And you can see that this narrative is continuing by certain political parties. We are not going to agree to that. And there is nothing that we are delaying here. Because as far as we are concerned, we are upright in terms of investigating corruption, even regarding FIFA allegations. We did call the minister. The issue of SAFA, when SAFA was his turn to come here, then certain members raised the issue of a FIFA match fixing. And then we then said we need to call the minister. And even now, we are not saying we are not going to call SAFA. But we are saying the first call of court must be the minister. Because that is the correct thing to do. Because we are not a banana republic whereby there is no heat. Things are just happening. We are just running to what the media writes in the newspapers. We are not going to agree to that narrative that certain people are trying to make that this government is corruption. And therefore, anything that the past is corrupt, we are not going to agree to that. At the moment, we should call the minister, and once we are not satisfied, we'll call other people that we think need to be called. But at the moment, we must, and that is the correct thing to do, because we don't want certain people from overseas, certain people from other countries to determine what must happen in this lovely African country. We are not going to agree to that.
I got strong views about using the sub judice principle as a stumbling block. The current approach that has been articulated is basically to censor the community, because the sub judice rule does not stop any authority from being accountable to Parliament, does not stop Parliament from asking questions to the individuals involved. And if, as a committee, we then don't have a united version in our understanding of what the sub judice rule, how the sub judice rule applies in this instance, we can use parliamentary forums to fix that. We can have a parliamentary legal opinion on that as to whether the sub judice rule, as referred to in this case, is a legitimate stumbling block. But, Chair, in short, the issue is that we've got a structure that was in existence, and we've got the political leadership of this country, which we acknowledge in the form of the minister. We do. Whether we may like it or not, you know, we acknowledge that. But the central question here is there are individuals in South African sports, and even representatives in government who are part of the BID committee and the local organizing committee, who haven't provided the country any vision of what are the series of events that happened prior to that. And if the strong move is to call for the minister as the sole voice to do this, we strongly feel that isn't the right approach. And I'm not going to infer to care out respect for your ruling, respect to what Honourable Manana said. But the essence of the issue is, what's the difficulty in basically summoning the members of SAFA and LOC committee and the BID committee that were there at the time, as this relates in particular to how this matter was handled? What's the difficulty in that? Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Manas, first of all, some of us were not based our arguments in subject to care. If one member, he has got a right to say that, the majority of us were saying that, let's call the minister. The committee is not saying that because this thing is subject to care. I've said everyone must voice his or her voice. I don't know about this subject to care if one is saying that he's right, but we're saying we've got a head of this department and of this committee. Let's call the minister, and there's no difficulty to call FIFA. We don't have any difficulty, but we need to follow the procedure that first and foremost our minister must come and tell us, because when he arrived in the office, those LOC, they've reported everything to himself, in order that after we've called him, if he is representing themselves, we'll have a chance to call them. But first and foremost, he didn't in government there's no vacuum. Immediately that you assume the duties, you take everything which is there, which means he knows everything what happened. So we want the minister to come and tell the committee, because he went to the media and we said we are supporting what he is saying. But as time goes on, they are going deeper and deeper, forgetting that they have a committee, that the committee must have information. That's the only thing that was saying. Honorable Musu.
No, Chairperson, thank you very much. I'm actually the one like who put the Chairperson, and I'm going to need a very powerful doctor of law to come and convince me that this is not something to say. But Chairperson, Honorable Ralokhoma just reminded me of something about when we say we need the minister, we feel that the minister is a relevant person. Previously, on match fixing thing, the former president of SAFA, Justin Namatandani, was implicated on issues of match fixing, and the committee is very much aware of that. But I did not hear even an instance where the committee said we should call Justin. We didn't. They instead said the minister is the very relevant person here. And I just, where consistency? Why all of a sudden now do we need the person who is being investigated, who is indicted, it is the one? Why do we do that? We are not consistent. And thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable members, I want to share it in this committee. We need not to vote because this is a meeting of leaders. The majority view is saying let's call the minister. The other views, about two honorable members of the opposition, are saying they don't have any problem with minister, but firstly they want that we must call the LOC. But according to me, reading the meeting, the majority view is saying let's call the meeting. If there are those who are seriously objecting, I don't want that we must vote. I didn't promote that in this committee. Is there any problem that let me ask my office to check the availability of minister, which is the only week which were left in parliament. But the parliament does have a right that if there's an urgent thing, even if we're in constituents, we must be recalled and come. So I will propose that on 23rd, where we are, 23rd, we're supposed to have one tennis. That minister must join this committee if he thinks that he's got an engagement. He must tell us the day before the end of June will come, wherever we are. Honorable Malak.
Okay, I waited for you to finish because I wanted to get a sense of clarity about the resolution. And to say as is, I'd like to move an amendment to the resolution. And I'll be guided by your direction.
Can you put your amendment?
That the amendment I'm proposing here is that the minister comes with SAFA. It's as simple as that.
I've got to answer you, but firstly let me put in the members your amendment. Sultani, Honorable Manana, Honorable Emus.
Thank you, Chair. What Honourable Member from the DS has said is exactly what I said in my last report, that Minister should preferably come with members, of SAFA, especially members of the LOC who were there at the time.
In the committee, we usually not say member of NC, member of UDM. There's nothing wrong. They have said Honourable Malaj, a member of DA. The member that just supported. No, there's nothing wrong. The member that just supported is the UDM, Mr. Fildan. I don't know whether today I must address members like that, but there's nothing wrong. But we don't promote that. Even if we are going to overseas, we say we are members of the portfolio committee. So, Honorable Manan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to object. The
I mean, the amendment for Honorable Malati that the minister must come with the SAFA, which SAFA, and including the Honorable Sultane, he says we must call the previous LOC. There is no LOC now. It was disbanded 2011 after the World Cup.
Oh, no, not sir. I agree with Honorable Manana, but I just want to add that, you know, when you invite a minister, you actually don't dictate as to who the minister is going to bring along as his interest. So I object to this thing. Thank you, sir.
Honorable members, I've put the motion, and the objection of the prime minister must be accompanied. Is rejected. What do we do? Is the motion still stands that the minister must come alone, and after minister come alone, if it's during the research, if agreed that must come, those other people, after we got information from horse's mouth, which is a postal head of this department of this committee, I don't think we'll have any problem to do that. But the short way that Minister must come to finish comment. My Honourable Malati.
Chair, we object to that motion as a first step.
When a motion has been objected, we'll be voting. But EE voting doesn't assist, because if the motion objected by the people who propose to see and call people, those who agree, they can sit in the meeting, because it's a national interest. We cannot not to come. Those who are agreeing that the minister must come, we must get that information. And if you adopt the motion, but the majority say the minister must come, we need the minister. We'll come, we'll ask that on the 23rd, the minister must come and address the committee. I'll see from there that members, when the time comes that minister must address us, they will just leave the committee. It's unusual, and it can be a pathetic situation. I don't think that everyone will enjoy that. We've been a united committee since we started. So I'm pleased that this U.S. thing must be divided this committee.
In support of your statement, I don't think it would, and we just want to reassure the committee that we are committed to the business of the committee and the committee working. If it so happens that we disagree over an issue, it doesn't mean that we are not committed to the committee. The record that I wanted to put in the objection was that we object to calling the minister alone on this issue.
Yes, your objection has been noted, but the final words of the committee, on behalf of the committee, the secretary of the committee, you must write a letter that we ask the minister on the 23rd that he must come in the committee. You liaise with me if the minister does have a problem on the 23rd. Any day off from there, we'll expect him to come and see the committee. That's the end of the day of the meeting today. I thank you all. Even you, Honorable Media, you are honorable. You don't need to be invited. We know you always bring trash, and that's your role. No, that's their role. They need not to be invited. We did invite you, and we appreciated that you get from the committee. What is it? Not from Uchabashin issued the statement and whoever. So we do appreciate because we do what